Tiller, we have one destroyer still docked in Portsmouth. Former Navy warship captain Tom Sharp told LBC last night.
Cyprus has been staring at Hezbollah since 2013 and the Syria crisis there. This attack should not have come as a surprise. So we should have been prepared. We should have sent the ship weeks before.
But there's no dither or delay on the markets, and we'll give you an update on that. Speaking of money, her spring statement yesterday, Chancellor Rachel Rees insisted her economic plan is working.
The plan that I have been driving forward since the election is the right one. Stability in our public finances, investment in our infrastructure, including our armed forces, and reform to Britain's economy.
Plus, as hostility towards Jewish people grows in this country, one entrepreneur has decided to apply for a German passport to get out of the UK. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. The Foreign Office says priority will be given to the most vulnerable, who will be contacted directly. The plane will take off from the Omani capital Muscat at 7 p.m. UK time. Tamsin Davis has been holidaying in Abu Dhabi and has spoken to LBC.
The response of the UAE government has highlighted to me, particularly being here and then in close communication with friends and family at home, the British government could be doing more. It's clear, as I say, we know exactly what they are putting in place. Yet we speak to people at home who I do think have a very different feel for what the situation is here.
Sir Keir Starmer will likely face further scrutiny over his decisions on the Iran conflict at Prime Minister's questions later. Donald Trump has stepped up his criticism of Sir Keir in recent days for not letting US forces use British bases for offensive strikes. Downing Street has since given Washington permission to use them for defensive action against Iranian missile targets. But the former Conservative leader Sir Ian Duncan Smith told LBC Sir Keir has mishandled the situation.
The question I raised with him yesterday was that, well, hang on a second, your backbenchers cheering you on about international law and staying out of it have kind of missed the point. We are now in it. And international law, apparently, according to you, supports us, fair enough, but we are in this. That America does these attacks is the same as the UK doing them. So we're now part of it suddenly, and we've got there by getting the Americans furious with us at the same time.
The US military says it's hit almost 2,000 targets in Iran since starting its joint bombing campaign with Israel on Saturday. It says Tehran has launched more than 500 ballistic missiles and drones in return. The Chancellor Rachel Rees will meet with North Sea industry bosses later over concerns about soaring gas and oil prices. Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz, which is a vital shipping route. President Trump says the US Navy will escort tankers through the strait if necessary to protect supplies. In other news, people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan are to be banned from applying to study in the UK. The government says too many nationals from those countries go on to claim asylum. The Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood says she's made the unprecedented move to stop people looking to exploit our generosity. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,484. It closed down 295 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
And now your travel news. It's starting to look a bit congested on the A4872 southbound. We're hearing reports people are slowing down to look at the Volkswagen Transporter sales event. Apparently you can get £1,500 off any new Transporter. That's any variant, any trim, and any colour until the 31st of March. Now that's a deal worth queuing for. Search VW Transporter offers. UK retail customers, 18 plus. Discount applies to price of all new Transporters ordered by 31st of March and delivered by 30th of June.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after seven on Wednesday, March the 4th. Coming up in this hour, British sovereign territory was attacked at the weekend and still the Royal Navy ship has yet to set sail. Why the dithering? Meanwhile, France moves a small flotilla at the quest of the Cyprus prison. We'll be speaking with the ambassador to Cyprus later in this hour to get a full sense of, I would imagine, the dismay, possibly even disgust. Meanwhile, of course, the conflict in the Middle East escalates, and if you're not involved, of course, militarily, or you have family brave enough to be in our military forces, or you know someone, or you are one of the 300,000 people living there, then you'll soon feel the effect at the pump as prices of petrol and diesel rise, other prices as well. The opening bell on the New York Stock Exchange. And those prices took off. In other news, we will look at that spring statement. Things can only get better or continue to get better is what the Labour government told us. Most of the OBR, Office for Budget Responsibility, figures seem to go completely the other way. But at least they got a statement out without any leaks. I suppose we should support that. There are leaks, sadly, in our prison estate. The ability to use drones to fly in drugs, mobile telephones and other objects. Chief Inspector of Prisons Charlie Taylor has been warning about this for some time.
There really is a menu in some prisons whereby you can almost choose your drug of choice. Prisoners are telling us that drugs are readily available in their prison.
And coming back to the reality of events in the Middle East, playing out on streets in the United Kingdom, and the sense of hostility towards Jewish people, we now hear that Sir Michael Moritz, one of the UK's richest men, by the way, entrepreneurs, explains why he's leaving Britain. He's going to get a German passport.
Britain's an uncomfortable place for Jews today. Anti-Semitism is always in the air, it's always in the water, it's always in the atmosphere. It's got a history of 2,000 years. It's not going to change.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
4 days. 4 days, count them, Sunday to Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. 4 days, and the Royal Naval ship is still tied up in Portsmouth. And apparently naval experts reckon it will take possibly six to seven days to get there. So just to clarify, British sovereignty was attacked and still no response. We once boasted, and don't blame the brave men and women who serve in it, we once boasted the most powerful navy in the world. Now we're struggling to get that destroyer down there. Meanwhile, France has already responded. We're going to be hearing from former Defence Secretary, and indeed serving in the Royal Navy Reserves for a number of years, Dame Penny Mordaunt, in a moment. Let's get the picture from Cyprus, because this in part follows a request, as featured in the newspaper there, the Cyprus Mail, claiming that the President appealed to both Emmanuel Macron and the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz to send naval vessels to help protect the island, because they felt, in a sense, that they had been let down. I remind you, this again is British sovereign territory. So let's get the picture now from High Commissioner Dr. Kyriakos Kouros, who joins me now. Good to have you on, High Commissioner. I've seen the report in the Cyprus Mail. Is it broadly right? What is the sentiment in Cyprus? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick, and good morning to your audience. Cyprus was and is in a region of particular geopolitical instability since forever, and the region currently is facing unprecedented crisis. I wish to be clear that our country does not consider itself involved in any way and does not intend to be part of any military operation. We remain committed to the humanitarian role we have upheld thus far, always as part of a solution, never as part of problems. And we intend to continue operate with the same level of responsibility. Our actions are guided by our commitment to the safety of this country, its citizens, and whomever else resides on the island. One observation, you talk a lot about the sovereign bases area in Cyprus. Don't forget that there are thousands of Cypriot citizens residing within these bases, which means that it's our responsibility also to take care of their safety. And that's why my president talked to your prime minister twice so far, explaining the situation on the ground, asking for more engagement between the two sides so that we can produce better results together. Yes, we have asked the assistance of other partners from the European Union. There are already two frigates from Greece, and four aircrafts, all equipped to deal with drone threats. Because for the ballistic missiles threat, we have our own capacities. This doesn't mean that we are not attracting more support from partners and friends so that we can solidify our shield towards this kind of threats.
High Commissioner, what do you want to see now from the United Kingdom?
More engagement, and I think we are on the right track already. Only yesterday, for example, apart from the telephone conversation between my president and Prime Minister Starmer, we had the Secretary Cooper talking to my foreign minister, Konstantinos Kombos. We had your national security advisor talking to our national security advisor. I think at this stage, we are fully engaged, looking towards the same target. And this is most important. Another fact that it must be of interest to British people. About 5% of the population of Cyprus are British expats who are living scattered all around the island. So when we want and talk about engagement with the British government, we mean that they have to help us safeguard the lives of everybody in the island.
Lastly, how disappointed are you by the slow response from the UK government?
Well, you talk to a diplomat now, you know that I'm not going to respond to that kind of a question. Yes.
All right, I will leave it there. Thank you for your time, Doctor. High Commissioner Dr. Kyriakos Kouros, Cypriot High Commissioner of the United Kingdom. So as we get into the political events, let's just pick up on some of the political narrative. In the House yesterday afternoon, Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer addressed that drone attack on the UK military base in Cyprus and assured the House the government is committed to the security of personnel and others there.
Last night, a drone hit RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus. There were no casualties in this strike. Mr. Speaker, it is important for me to say that our bases in Cyprus are not being used by US bombers. The security of our friends and partners in Cyprus is of critical importance. And, Mr. Speaker, I want to be clear. The strike on RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus was not in response to any decision that we have taken.
Later in the day, it was announced the UK would be sending HMS Dragon, a Type 45 destroyer, to the Mediterranean as an act of defence. This appears, of course, to be in concert with the French movements as well.
Faced with this unstable situation and the uncertainties of the coming days, I gave orders for the aircraft carrier Charles de Gaulle, its air assets and its frigate escort to set course for the Mediterranean.
Emmanuel Macron. Let's turn to Dame Penny Mordaunt, whose former Conservative MP indeed served as Defence Secretary and served in the Royal Navy Reserves until quite recently, I understand, for some 16 years and joins me now. Dame Penny, what should have been the British government's response in your view? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I just think that it seems to me more important to the Prime Minister that he sends messages to his backbenchers that he's not Tony Blair than the messages he ought to be sending both to our friends, including the United States, and also to our foes. I mean, just listening to that clip, Nick, it seems to me that the Prime Minister thinks that if he just doesn't get involved and he just emphasises to Iran that we're not involved in these strikes, that they're going to leave us alone. I mean, that's an idiotic position to take. This is a country that the regime, not the people, that hate us. The average number of attacks on British shipping in the Straits of Hormuz per year is about 500. And they're conducting cyber attacks against this nation every week. So the idea that if you just emphasise repeatedly that you're not involved in the strikes against Iran, that people are just going to leave you alone is for the birds. Ships should have been deployed weeks ago. We've known this is building up. The US have been building up an armada in the Mediterranean and the Gulf. And I can only conclude, because assets are now being deployed, that although I'm quite happy to talk about the lack of budget for the Navy and other areas of our armed forces, that it wasn't about resourcing. It was that people didn't think to do it. And
is the argument, could the argument made, Dame Penny, that we don't have enough kit, we don't have enough battleships and personnel, and part of that is down to your watch as Defence Secretary some years ago?
Well, look, Nick, I completely agree that we haven't done enough over many years. And if you look at my maiden speech in the House of Commons to also what I said publicly at the last Conservative budget, where I said publicly and was chastised for it that we needed to increase defence spending, and that had to be at the cost of cutting back on other things, and everything in between. I have always said this, in part because I live in Portsmouth and I see it every single day. It's not just about what assets we've got, the volume of ships and so forth. It's also about ensuring they've got enough spare parts to actually get to sea. It's no good just having these on the books. If they're in port and they're not protecting this nation in our interests, what blinking use are they? So, and I think now we're at an absolute crisis point. The government, I mean, Keir Starmer's eyeballed the citizens of this country and the President of the United States and said we need to spend more on defence. He's committed to the new NATO floor. Our defence chiefs have given us 4 years to modernise our armed forces, to put things in place that would have protected Akrotiri from that drone, and also the UK from drone attacks. We don't have those defences in place now. When does the Treasury plan to turn on the taps? Year five. All right. We are going to be in serious trouble if number 10 and number 11 don't wake up and start funding vital defence for this nation.
Dame Penny, final question. As a former defence secretary, as indeed a former international development secretary, were the attacks mounted by the US and Israel, did they break international law?
So, I don't think so, but there's an important point here, Nick. Even if we're working hand in glove with the US on a mission, there will still be elements that we choose not to get in, be involved in. And that's because we've got different capabilities, different risk appetite, different targeting policies. I think this whole issue over basing is confected. I don't think he needed to have said what he said. He said it in part because I think he thinks if he's just nice to Iran, they won't be nasty to us. But he really didn't need to say that. The basing was always going to be involved because we had to adopt this defensive posture. And what he's done in order to send a message to his backbenchers that he's not Tony Blair, he's sent a terrible message to our allies, the US, right at the time we want them to appreciate NATO and European bases. And he's basically shown to our foes that if you have a go, don't expect much to happen.
Dame Penny, thank you for your time. Dame Penny Mordaunt, former Defence Secretary, former Conservative MP, and you served in the Royal Navy Reserves for some 16 years. Coming up after the news, an update on the markets. And later in this hour, of course, that spring statement, which in a sense went rather unnoticed because of these concerning events in the Middle East, but what it means for you and, of course, the pound in your purses and your wallet. 7:17 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The government has chartered a flight out of Oman to help British nationals wanting to leave the Middle East as the conflict in the region intensifies. The plane will leave the Omani capital Muscat at 7 p.m. GMT. While Sir Keir Starmer will face questions from MPs in the House of Commons later over his decisions on the conflict in Iran. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most, cloudy for Scotland and Northern Ireland with some patchy rain, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are long delays on the M25. Clockwise, there's one lane closed after Junction 6 for Godstone because a lorry has broken down, so the key start around Junction 5 for the M26. It's also slow on the M25 clockwise because a car has broken down between Junction 10 for the A3 and Junction 11 for Chertsey, so one lane is closed. There are queues in Basildon on the A13 westbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident between the Five Bells interchange and the Stamford La Hope turnoff. In Harrow, it's slow on the A404 Watford Road southbound. It's partly blocked. That's because of an accident at the North Park Hospital entrance. And on the Tube, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Piccadilly Circus and Elephant and Castle, and severe delays on the rest of the Bakerloo line. It's because of problems with the signals.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
big's the job? Compact and nimble? That's the Vauxhall combo. A bit of everything? Meet the award-winning Vivaro. Or is it a load-it-all job? That's Movano. Whatever the job, there's a Vauxhall van for it. Right now, during the Vauxhall Pro Days van event, until the 16th of March, you can save £750 off any new Vauxhall van, electric or diesel, on top of all other offers. Search Vauxhall van range. Business users only, 18 plus, £750 excluding VAT. T's and C's apply. Search Vauxhall van range. The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, Anthony coming to you. You'll be the first of the callers. Let's quickly take you just through some of the front pages. And this line from Donald Trump yesterday, that Sir Keir Starmer is no Churchill, is the front page of many newspapers. We're going to look at that in more detail, by the way. We're looking at the Royal Navy aspect, as it were, today. The Churchill line is Prime Minister Trump mocks as no Churchill, is the front page of the Daily Mail. It's also the front page of the Times. PM is no Churchill, says Trump as tensions rise. The Sun goes with the story that we have with a rather punchy headline. As Trump blasts Starmer as no Churchill, we send one destroyer to defend base. The main headline, ship happens. That was ship with a P, happens, is the front page of The Sun. The Daily Express points us towards that spring budget, which we're also going to be offering coverage of, quite a lot of coverage actually in this hour. A million more of the poorest pensioners will have to pay income tax in Labour's state pension stealth raid, is their claim. We're speaking with a senior member of the Treasury later in the show. In the front page of the Financial Times, Mideast energy shock batters the markets, and we'll have more on that in just a moment. Go to the LBC app for the most recent update of the situation, as it is reported that the Ayatollah who was killed on Saturday, his son now will replace him as the new supreme leader. And to take one other story at random from the websites, no, there is nothing else. I'm just quickly looking through Sky News, through the Huffington Post, through the Mail. No, they all go with the Huff Post saying he's not Winston Churchill. That is the line that really has gained some traction. As I say, we're covering that later in the show. Let's get your voices on the radio. Anthony's in Ashford. We're talking about the fact that the Royal Navy, without doubt, once ruled the waves, and now we're struggling to get one ship down to Cyprus. Your reaction to that? Good morning.
Yes, well, what's news, Nick? Good morning, yes. Good morning. Because we once had a thing called the Ark Royal.
We did.
And what happened to it? It was broken up under Cameron and sent to Turkey to make tin cans and razor blades. I always thought that was a bit of a mistake.
We've got two aircraft carriers now,
yes.
But they're both in dock. One's in Rosyth, and I think
that's
the other's
it.
In Portsmouth, but I'm not sure. But they're not out on the ocean waves.
No, that's it. I don't want to undermine any respect the war effort, because that's what it's going to become. But it's unfortunate that these two ships seem to be somewhat plagued with issues, you know. They never seem to be in the right place at the right time.
No. Nope.
They're rather lumbering, because I don't know the old Ark Royal if it was pretty agile. But we always had that Ark Royal, didn't we, to send to the Falklands or wherever. It was symbolic.
Yeah. The former head of the Navy, Admiral the Lord West, says we haven't got a single warship in the Middle East apart from an old mine hunter. I've never been anything like it. It is a disgrace. He's not wrong on this, I sense.
No, that's right. We had the same thing with the Libya campaign, didn't we? The so-called campaign, and that didn't go too well. They had to use Cyprus. But we have technology. Let's not talk ourselves down. We're the experts, world experts in logistics, everything, special forces. So I think we're really in the background in this. I'm reluctant to say anything to undermine Starmer, anybody. This thing had to be done, Nick, with Iran. We left it far too long, this boil.
Well, you say we left it far too long. I mean, we haven't actually done anything. I know we're offering defensive support to the US. Are you concerned? There seems a very valid argument. As Emmanuel Macron says, this is a breach of international law. That does seem a very valid argument. Is that of any concern to you?
No, it had to be done, you know, and Trump did warn, didn't he? He said, you know, if you kill your people, you know, I will come to your aid. And he was a little bit slow, but he did in the end.
But if we ignore international law, what are the disciplines by which the world effectively governs itself, Anthony?
Well, yes, we saw that with Iraq, didn't we? To an extent, that had to be done because Saddam was a menace. Sometimes the rules have to be thrown out if there is a danger to us, to world peace.
And to military personnel and others, of course, the expats, as the High Commissioner, the Cypriot High Commissioner, was telling us. Anthony, thanks for getting us started. 7:24, Seamus in Wallington. Seamus, your view of our position as regards Cyprus. It's at best looking a little second rate here, isn't it?
Good morning to you, Nick. I'm trying to work out what this Prime Minister, where he actually is. I don't know if he knows whether or not he's Victor or Victoria. I'm not sure if he's a coward or he's incompetent, but he's not a man capable of leading a country, one, and two, this did need it to be done, and it needed to be done quickly. This is long, long, long overdue. He's more interested in responding to his backbenchers and also dealing with the Islamification of our politics. He's worried about the Muslim vote, and that is driving how he reacts, and that is sending out a very bad message to everyone else in the world.
What would leadership look like now to you, Seamus?
Well, my ultimate political hero is Margaret Thatcher.
Right.
But I'd also give Tony Blair credit, as much as I didn't like his politics. But Tony Blair put this country first. Starmer does not. Starmer does, to me, does not represent this country, does not love it, and he's not proud of it.
Finally, on a foreign agenda, many would say Tony Blair might have put this country first. He also put it into an unnecessary war and cost hundreds of lives. On this side, thousands globally.
Well, Nick, you've also had a long conversation this morning as well about international law. Where does Iran sit with international law when it's destroying innocent lives in the Middle East and throughout the world?
Total breach. And, of course, imprisoning tens of thousands of others. Seamus, thank you. 7:26, more calls to come. But to that front page I mentioned of the Financial Times, stocks and bonds tumbled yesterday as fears of a prolonged shock to energy prices from the war in the Middle East rattled global markets. Iraq forced to start shutting down oil production. Let's turn to Susanna Streeter, who's Chief Investment Strategist at the Investment Service Wealth Club. OK, I appreciate this is a difficult one to track, but where do you imagine it goes next? Good morning.
Hello there. Yeah, it is obviously very difficult to track. I think the crucial thing is how long will this last for? Now, we've had some indications from President Trump that he doesn't want this to be a very long, drawn-out conflict, saying something like 4 to 5 weeks. Now, if that were to be the case, perhaps these rises that we've seen in crude oil prices, in gas prices, these dramatic climbs, particularly the price of gas, may be relatively short-lived. But there will still be some effect for prices at the pumps, for example, because they feed through relatively quickly. We'll have to see what all this happens for the energy price cap due to be announced in July. Because, of course, if this increase in gas prices is sustained, it will have an impact. So it's really how long will it last? And until we get a clearer idea of this, it's very difficult to assess how long this volatility is going to last on financial markets and on commodity exchanges as well.
Of course, the problem is duration. The factors are not really down to any one person's controls, including the President of the United States. Isn't that the reality, Susanna?
Yes, that is. And also, of course, we've seen the conflict widen further, encapsulating Lebanon. There wasn't an expectation that Saudi Arabia would be drawn in with attacks on some of the facilities there, but also, as we know, on US allies right across the Gulf region. And it just really does depend how this conflict plays out from here. Now, you are seeing some pretty dramatic falls. South Korea's KOSPI, well, trading has been interrupted. It fell below 10% earlier, the KOSPI. The FTSE 100 fell at its sharpest rate since last April. We are expecting a tiny bit of a recovery today, but that's because gold prices are expected to rise again. Gold, of course, is a safe haven, and that's where a lot of people are trying to put their money right now. So it may be a little bit more insulated today, but certainly there's huge amount of volatility on financial markets.
Front page of the Financial Times signals that Iraq has been forced to start shutting down oil production. How significant is that, Susanna?
Well, it's another big significant move, and it's going to again push up crude prices. We're seeing that already. Crude oil currently, so the benchmark Brent crude, hovering around $84 a barrel, a really sharp climb compared to where we were last week. And of course, we are seeing this across the board, really. Other facilities, the production being curtailed. It's essentially all linked to the Strait of Hormuz, how much supply can travel through there. Around 20% of the oil's crude supplies do have to travel through that strait. And we know that Iran's Republican Guard has threatened to set ships alight. Now, I think some of the gains may be, there may be a lid kept on the gains of crude oil, because President Trump said effectively he will provide an insurance backstop, the US administration will, for those companies who still do want to travel. They could even have an escort from the Navy. I still think there's going to be a lot of reticence. We don't know how that plan will actually play out. Insurance costs have risen. Major shipping companies are already avoiding that region altogether.
Susanna Streeter is Chief Investment Strategist at the Investment Service Wealth Club. Thanks for your input on that. One newspaper, the Daily Express, is reporting there are queues at petrol stations in some parts of the country. I bought petrol yesterday. I needed it, by the way. This was not panic buying. There wasn't really a queue where I went. I tell you this, I do notice that the price had ticked up a little bit. But I wonder if you've noticed that. I was buying petrol. I'm sure the same with diesel. If one goes up, the other will go up. But have you noticed? I think the increase was around 3 pence per litre from what I recognised when I filled up yesterday. Have you noticed that? Is the price already going up at the pumps? And this idea is in one of your newspapers this morning that some areas there are already queuing. Have you noticed that as well? Is that I do not want to start a panic. We are not going to start a panic. We're not going to have people driving down to the petrol station, queuing up forever, but just the reality out there. Because obviously when I come to work in the morning at 6 o'clock, it's dark and many of the petrol stations are shut, so I have no idea whether you then queue for petrol. We might pick up on that. We'll come back, of course, to our reaction about the Navy that once ruled the oceans and ruled the waves. In other news...
A primary school and a nursery in lockdown and a murder investigation underway after a man in his 20s died in an alleged attack in broad daylight. I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
Plus later in this hour, we will pick up on Rachel Reeves and the spring statement with one of her senior colleagues. And then in the next hour...
This is not the age of Churchill. I will say the UK has been very, very uncooperative with that stupid island that they have.
We'll respond to those comments as well. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The first government charter flight will take off later, bringing stranded Britons home from the Middle East. The Foreign Office says it'll leave Muscat in Oman tonight, with the most vulnerable given priority. Sir Keir Starmer will face further scrutiny over his decisions on the Iran conflict at Prime Minister's questions later. Donald Trump has stepped up his criticism of Sir Keir in recent days for not letting US forces use British bases for offensive strikes. The US military says it's hit almost 2,000 targets in Iran since starting its bombing campaign on Saturday. Opposition politicians there say they're still not satisfied by the Trump administration's efforts to explain its objectives in Iran. Congress will vote tonight to try and stop the operation continuing without their approval. One other story for you. People from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan are to be banned from applying to study in the UK. The government says too many nationals from those countries go on to claim asylum. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I didn't hear the Lib Dems go nuts about the cost of bringing Afghans on flights out of Afghanistan. I didn't hear Ed Davey asking whether they had to pay their fair share. Their argument is these Dubai Brits, with their turkey teeth and their Swiss bank accounts, don't deserve these flights because they haven't paid it. Well, apply that to all manner of individuals who come from overseas into this country, contribute nothing, and who the Lib Dems are apparently fine with.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advanced train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:35, and here is the reality I sense when I talked about fuel prices, the pain at the pumps. David in Cornwall reports that diesel's gone up 11 pence per litre in 2 days in Cornwall. Harrow says from 139 to 150, you don't say what type of fuel that is. Paul paid 6p rise per litre here. This comes in from Fred in Plymouth. Getting to the forecourt with all the queues was a pain in the rear end. Having to get past all of the queues for me to park my electric car so I could nip in and get a sandwich. Could do with an extra lane for those of us who've made the sensible option of going electric for our meal deals. I hope you got your sandwich. You might take more calls on that. Let's go more broadly into the world of finance. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. Something we really do need to focus on is, of course, and something that would have had far more attention but for the conflict in the Middle East, is this spring statement, a budget without the numbers. What was it, Christian May? Good morning. And what's your interpretation? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. A number of people in the city suggested yesterday to their trading clients and indeed to us journalists that the spring statement was an irrelevance. And these observations were made before the poor Chancellor even got up to speak. Now, the reason for that was primarily because it's overshadowed so dramatically by events in the Middle East. It's also the case that the nature of the event itself had been changed. And this is actually quite sensible, by the way, that it's been downgraded a little bit as an event. That's because the OBR does not offer its full fat analysis of government spending policies in the way that it now just does once a year at the budget. So what were we left with? Well, we were left with a speech from the Chancellor. A speech that was almost certainly written prior to the first bombs falling on Iran and containing forecasts for the UK economy from the OBR that were also put together prior to the latest dramatic developments in the Middle East. So with all those things taken together and the fact that it didn't really contain any great new tax or spending announcements, you could say charitably, I suppose, it was a bit of a damp squib. Less charitably, but I think more accurately, you could echo the Shadow Chancellor, Mel Stride, who said that the Chancellor is in denial. And he said, what planet is this honourable lady living on? And I do agree with him, because this was a statement which simply failed to meet the moment of intense conflict and uncertainty, yes, but also the reality of our economic condition. The Chancellor, if she said anything yesterday, said, my plan is working. She said it again and again and again, and it was a very strange thing to try and hammer home on the day when the official forecasts prove the opposite, that our growth forecast for this year has been slashed from a pretty poor 1.4% to an embarrassing 1.1%. So on the day when your official forecasters tell you that your plan evidently isn't working, this, by the way, being the plan for growth, we're told their number one priority. They're 20 months into office, Nick. Unemployment has climbed and is climbing, and the economy is barely registering meaningful growth. So I think it's fair to ask, is the plan working? The Chancellor yesterday insisted that it was, and I just don't see much evidence of it, and I suspect our listeners don't see much or feel much evidence of it. And of course, the wider implications of this conflict on the Chancellor is out of her hands. The possible spike in inflation energy price surge has meant that traders in the city have moved from a position being 90% sure that there would be an interest rate cut coming up to just 30%. Some people now saying there will probably only be one interest rate cut this year, if that. And the Chancellor has set a lot of stall on that downward trajectory of both inflation and interest rates. So yes, that element is out of her hands. But she had to deal with forecasts that show the plan has not worked.
Finally, let's finish with a story about the TV sector and an interesting tie-up. Who's talking about a merger?
Yeah, Yeah, the British production group behind The Traitors, immensely successful and popular, has struck a £6 billion deal to merge with French rival Banijay Entertainment. Now, All Three Media confirmed the tie-up with the studio behind Peaky Blinders, and that's going to create one of the world's largest independent TV makers. And a combined new group will be responsible for producing about 170 shows and indeed live events and associated events and spin-offs across Europe. And so within this new group, you will now find shows such as MasterChef, Gogglebox, Call the Midwife. And this comes about from Redbird IMI, which owns All Three Media. And Banijay, the French rival, will be equal partners in this new joint venture. And if the phrase Redbird is familiar to you, it's because that was the group that was trying to buy The Telegraph, but has since been muscled out. So whilst all eyes in the media sector are on the Warner Brothers deal, which is considerably bigger, it is also the case that there's quite a spicy tie-up here in Europe with a new £6 billion production group on the books.
Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, thank you. You've taken us to 7.40. Let's just feature some of the reactions that are coming in, and then coming to you, Suze, you're going to be the next caller. Mick in Sutton Coldfield, we owe no loyalty to the US, especially not led by a colossal moron such as Donald Trump. He says we're not dealing with Churchill. Well, we are not dealing with FDR. Trump makes George W. Bush look like a genius. Same story. This comes in from John, who says, it is wrong to continue knocking the government in this fashion. You have to realise that they are simply doing the best they can in the circumstances. Charlie says, a drone hit a runway, caused minimal damage. Calm down. Charlie, I don't know about, yes, it was minimal damage, but that was fortunate. It could have been extensive damage, and we've still not scrambled anything to defend it. Suze in Manchester. What do you want to say, Suze? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I was just very intrigued by why we seem to have, especially to the right of our politics, like a frothing of going to war with Iran. I'm glad that Keir Starmer never
We're not going to war. We're in a defensive position.
Thank God. Yeah. Thank God. Why would we want to put our British Prime Minister to do a war with a wanted war criminal and a person who's been convicted of crimes in America?
Hold on. Why wouldn't we want to defend sovereign base in Cyprus when it's under attack?
We are doing. He said he's just planes in the sky.
The ship hasn't even sailed, Suze.
I'm sorry, that's the ship, but he did say planes were in the sky for defensive operations in the Middle East.
What is the point of having this ship? What is the point of having a Royal Navy if you've got nothing apart from a clapped-out mine hunter? And I offer no criticism of the personnel, by the way, serving on it. That's all you've got in the region. How is that a defence?
Because we were taken by surprise by Israel and America.
How can the Americans have been building up an armada since the year began?
In negotiations, Nick, behind the scenes, they're in negotiations with this other country, okay? They're halfway through negotiations. England would have got told for security reasons before this, and we're going to all this. This is a decoy.
I think we can see the channels of communication between the UK and the US are a little bit fraught now. Surely, as you witness the build-up of the US armada in that region, you think, well, it might be an idea to send something down. And even now,
why?
The attack happened to protect our personnel in the region and the military personnel.
No, but we were under attack. We're not involved in that. They were claiming
You don't think that when you start launching missiles on Iran, they're going to lash out? You just think they're just going to take it?
I think it was Hezbollah who actually set off that drone, to be fair.
Yes, okay. It wasn't Iran or its proxies. Or its proxies, you're right.
Okay, so its proxies, have they repeated it since?
I think they've been shooting down some drones now. I think they have been shooting, fortunately. Well, certainly that's the RAF have put out video evidence of that. So we are
defending the base then?
But why have the ship? Well, let's keep the ship at Portsmouth all the time then. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, no, that's not the point. What I'm saying is, why do we need to get involved in another war on the basis of some two psychopaths?
He's talking about defence. And if you support the line of defence, we are not offering enough defence. We are now moving a ship that actually, in a perfect world, should have probably been moved in January, certainly should have been readied, and we're still not yet set sail. Suze, we're going round in circles. We'll see what others make of your stance. Thank you. We need to go to other stories. And a life lockdown followed after a man in his 20s died following a stabbing incident. For here with full details, George Icke, LBC's reporter in Birmingham. George, good morning.
Nick, good morning. This is alleged to have happened in broad daylight, with police being called just after lunchtime at 12:06 to a street in the Alum Rock area, a couple of miles from the city centre. Late last night, police confirmed a man in his 20s had now died, and this was a murder investigation. Armed officers arrived on Bridge Road, close to a nursery and a primary school, both of which went into a period of lockdown following reports a man had been stabbed in the street and a woman allegedly injured. We're told her injuries aren't believed to be life-threatening. Police said a 32-year-old man had been arrested in connection with the man's death, and he remains in police custody. West Midlands police have said this incident isn't being treated as terrorism-related, and that the deployment of armed officers is routine when responding to reports of a weapon in a public place. West Midlands Ambulance Service received multiple 999 calls about this. They dispatched three ambulances, two paramedic officers, a trauma team, and the Warwickshire and Northamptonshire Air Ambulance to the scene, where crews administered advanced life support for a man with serious injuries. Detective Superintendent James Monroe from the force described it as a contained incident, and that they understand it will have been distressing and concerning for those who saw it. They're asking anyone with information or who may have dashcam footage or mobile phone footage to come forward to help with the investigation.
George Ike reporting. Coming up after the news headlines, that spring statement from one of the Chancellor's senior colleagues saying apparently that we are on track to deliver on promises made by the government prior to election. We'll hear from him. 7:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict in the region enters a fifth day. The Prime Minister will face questions from MPs in the Commons later over his decisions on the war in Iran. And the government is to stop issuing student visas to people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are long delays on the M25 clockwise. One lane is closed after Junction 6 for Godstone because a lorry has broken down, so the queue starts around Junction 5 for the M26. There are queues in Basildon on the A13 westbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident between the Five Bells interchange and the Stamford La Hope turn-off. It's slow in Harrow. The A404 Watford Road southbound is partly blocked at the Northwick Park Hospital entrance because of an accident. There are delays in Chertsey on the A317 Pyecroft Road. It's partly blocked in both directions at Bellbridge Road. That's because of an accident on the roundabout. On the tube, there are severe delays on the entire Bakerloo line. That's after there were some problems with the signals earlier. And there's disruption to some flights to and from City Airport because of the fog.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
We all love a good meal, but there's no feeling quite like cooking one. Whether it's everyone at yours for a Sunday roast or after-school sausage and mash. Quick, simple, gone in minutes. One thing brings it all together. Ah, Bisto. The original gravy. Rich, smooth, and unmistakable since 1908. When the gravy makes the dish, make the gravy. Ah, Bisto.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. Even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue. Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell. Feel good. Investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
How big's the job? Compact and nimble? That's the Vauxhall combo. A bit of everything? Meet the award-winning Vivaro. Or is it a load-it-all job? That's Movano. Whatever the job, there's a Vauxhall van for it. Right now, during the Vauxhall Pro Days van event, until the 16th of March, you can save £750 off any new Vauxhall van, electric or diesel, on top of all other offers. Search Vauxhall van range. Business users only, 18 plus, £750 excluding VAT. T's and C's apply. Search Vauxhall van range.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49 now to a conversation that I sense would have started earlier in the show had it not been for those troubling events in the Middle East, and that concerns the spring statement. And as I always tell you, after a spring statement or a full budget, I always think it makes sense to read the opinion columns of the Financial Times. And their piece today is headlined, "A Dull UK Fiscal Statement Comes with a Fragile Outlook." And the subdeck, the line under that, "As risks mount, Reeves must shore up the public finances and growth agenda." Here to discuss, James Murray, one of the Chancellor's most senior colleagues, Chief Secretary to the Treasury, joining me now. A rather gloomy, pessimistic leader in the Financial Times. How do you respond? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. What I would say is that if you look at what the Chancellor set out yesterday in terms of the economic forecast, in terms of the update, it really showed that we've got the right economic plan. Now, that is not to say for a second that it's job done. Yeah, that's not to say there's not a lot more we want to do to get growth higher, to put more money in people's pockets, to go further on the cost of living. But if it's pointing in the right direction. So with us cutting the cost of living, with inflation down, cutting borrowing, including interest rates coming down.
Which you have no responsibility. That's the Bank of England, has been independent for years.
It's absolutely independent.
Yeah.
But the government. Well, no, because the government has a role to play in providing stability in the public finances. Some of the decisions that the Chancellor took at the autumn budget last year, the OBR and the Bank of England recognise will feed through into lower inflation. So, for instance, taking £150 off energy bills, that, along with the other measures around rail fare freezes and so on, help to bring down inflation. And that helps in that regard, whilst respecting the Bank of England's decisions, as you say.
All right. You talk about the... We'll come to the OBR in a moment, if we may, Chief Secretary. You talk about the right economic plan. Clearly, I was listening to a different statement yesterday, because we're talking about a country now that has unemployment hitting a near 10-year high and stagnant growth. How does that mean you provided the right economic plan?
If you look at the growth figures from last year we were the fastest growing G7 economy in
Europe. In a very, very low figure, isn't it? Let's be honest.
But we're still...
That's like saying with a pick of bad performers. Let's be realistic with each other.
Look, I think it's...
You might laugh, it happens to be true.
No, but I think it's worth recognising what happened last year, but also more importantly for what we're saying about the forecast, about the context in which we're going into the next few years in. And let me just say this, Nick.
The growth has been downgraded, of course.
Yes, but can I say this point?
Yeah.
If you look over the next 3 years, the growth forecast is largely unchanged. It's gone down a bit in 2026, but up in 27 and 28. What is important to me is also, what is the direction of travel? What are the foundations going into the next few years of the economic situation? And if you look at what the Chancellor said at the update yesterday, with inflation down, borrowing down, debt down, debt interest payments down, at the same time as investment is up, business confidence is up, all of that means that we are going into the next few years with a confidence that we can beat the forecasts. We beat the forecasts before, and because of all the foundations being in place, we're confident we can build the forecasts again.
Well, tell that to the record number of young people who are not in work, education or training. How's that come about?
Well, look, you are absolutely right to talk about young people who are not in work, not in employment, not in training. And in fact, this is a long-term structural issue which really started to pick up after the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, around that kind of time. Now, this continued throughout the previous government. The level of inactivity, so that's where young people are not even looking for work, hit a record level under the previous government. And we are absolutely determined to get young people back into work. It's so important that we do that through the work we're doing around the youth guarantee to give people who are young, who are on benefits,
but
a guaranteed job.
They're not getting back into work, Mr. Murray. You've been in power for 20 months and they're not getting back into work. There's no change in the figures at all. All you've done with the previous budget is to make it difficult for hotels and the hospitality sector to hire young staff because of the hike in NI.
No, what we've done in previous years since we got into office is to make sure that young people get paid better for the work they do through the increases in the national minimum wage. But look, this is a longer-term problem. This is a more ingrained structural problem.
Do you accept the UK's youth unemployment rate is above the EU average for the first time since records began, in part due to Rachel Reeves' policies at the last budget?
No, look,
that's not me, that's the Financial Times.
But Nick, what I think I don't accept is that the issues around youth unemployment have come out of nowhere. They started, as I said, to get pick up in sort of 2009 after the financial crisis. They got worse and worse throughout the years of the Conservatives, with the number of young people who are not in employment, education or training going up and up. And it's a long-term problem that we are now grappling with, and we are dealing with it by helping to make sure that young people who are on benefits are then offered a job, a job placement, a guaranteed work placement, to get back into the world of work. And it's so important that we do that, because otherwise we are writing off another the next generation. We need to get people back into work, and young people are at the front of our mind.
Subject of benefits, the bill is due to rise by another £18 billion this year. When are measures going to be taken to address that?
Well, we've already started taking measures to bring the benefits bill down. We've already taken steps on fraud and error. We've already rebalanced the universal credit system. But when it comes to what we're doing next in terms of getting people into work and helping to bring the benefits bill down, young people are our focus. If you look at what Pat McFadden, the Work and Pension Secretary, is focused on, he's commissioned Alan Milburn to do work around getting young people back into work, because we know we need to support those young people into work, get them off benefits, and that helps take pressure off the benefits bill.
Let's talk a little bit about the workplace, if we may, Chief Secretary. Working people, we heard from the Chancellor, quotes, working people are better off, yet payroll numbers are now lower than at the start of when you came into power, and wage growth has halved under Labour. How does that help the working man or woman?
Well, we know that wage growth...
No, would you answer that question? How does that help the working man or woman?
No, but I'm just going to go back in on some of the stats there, because we know that wages have been growing faster than inflation since we came into office, and we know that wages...
They're growing at a quarter of what they were before the 2008 crash.
Sorry, wages have gone up by more in the first 18 months of this government than in the first 10 years of the previous government. So if you're talking about comparing our record... we are making sure that people's wages are going up. We're helping people who are on the national living wage by having an increase in that. We're making sure people have more money in their pockets. And that's what we set out to do, and that's what we're beginning to deliver on.
One group of people who were in the workplace but now hopefully could enjoy a retirement are the pensioners. And it is reported that 1 million more now will have to pay income tax or tax on their state pension after she figures that she announced concerning the £12,750 set figure. What went wrong there?
Well, just to be clear about the situation that pensioners are in, if you are on the basic or the new state pension, and that's your only income, we have set out a guarantee that you will not pay income tax on that over the course of this parliament. So we recognise that people for whom the state pension is their only income, if they go above the personal allowance threshold, we are saying you will not pay income tax on that over this parliament.
Right, but as former pensions minister Sir Steve Webb has pointed out, it seems that by 2030 there could be 1 million more tax-paying pensioners than the government had previously expected. Why has she got her figures wrong again, Mr Murray?
Well, no, look, the point is, Nick, that there are some pensioners who are only on the state pension, and there are others who will have other incomes as well.
I understand that. But those with this £12,570, I'm so sorry, which she said in her budget in November, will, according to these experts, be dragged into paying tax. So she's got her figures wrong again, hasn't she?
No, Nick, sorry, I'm not following you at the point you're making, because if people are already having their income from other sources...
The poorest pensioners, aren't they, who by 20... Not in this lifetime, I give you that, but by 2031 could be dragged into paying state... by paying income tax on their state pension.
But we set out our commitment in this parliament, and for those pensioners for whom the state pension is their only source of income... But if they go above the £12,570, the personal allowance, they will not pay income tax on their state pension. It's only obviously if people have income from other sources, that is a different matter.
You're a well-educated man.
Can you sense how this feels for the good folk of Ealing North and my listeners? You and your colleagues pick up an inflation-busting pay rise of 5%. An MP's salary goes to a whisker under £100,000. Meanwhile, in a few years' time, the poorest pensioners, state pension, will have to pay income tax in 5 years' time. What sort of look is that?
Well, on that point around MP's pay, that's not a matter for the government. That's for Parliament to determine.
Why don't you refuse it? Why doesn't Keir Starmer get his cabinet together and say, I tell you what, this is a bad look, folks, let's get rid?
Well, what we have said, what we are in control of, is ministerial salaries, and we've frozen those, so we're not taking any increase in ministerial salaries. That's what we are able to do as ministers,
but your colleagues,
as a government.
Further back in the benches, if you will, they're all going to pick up a 5%. That would be a dream for the pensioners listening to this and the pensioners of Ealing North, wouldn't it, Mr Murray?
Well, look, our commitment to pensioners is to commit to the triple lock, which is putting more money into the pockets of pensioners. Mm. And our specific commitment to those pensioners on the lowest incomes, where they only get the state pension, is that even if their pension goes above the personal allowance, they will not pay income tax in this parliament.
Last minute or so together. Obviously, I have to take you to events in the Middle East, and they do reflect the work that you and the Chancellor have done. I mean, this all could be unbalanced, couldn't it? If the Middle East continues, unfortunately, and the conflagration continues, all the facts and figures go out the window, don't they?
Well, we don't know how long the current conflict in the Middle East is going to go on. We don't know how that's going to unfold. But what we do know is that
a 10% oil price increase can cut UK economic growth by 0.1 to 0.5%. Are those figures you recognise?
No, but sorry, Nick, can I just say, because this is early days in what's happening in Iran and the Middle East. And what we do know, though, is that going into it, we are in a stronger position. So when the Chancellor set out her economic plan after we were elected, we were very clear that we wanted to make the economy stronger and more resilient to any shocks that we might face. Now, obviously, there is a situation unfolding that may impact us, but we are going into it from a much stronger, more resilient position, with stronger public finances, with inflation lower, with interest rates lower, with borrowing lower, with debt interest payments lower. All of that means we are going into it from a stronger position.
France has been able to get 4 ships to set sail towards the region. Unfortunately, the destroyer that we'd like to deploy is still tied up at Portsmouth. Why is it going to take the best part of a week to move that ship on?
Well, you're right to say that HMS Dragon is going to be heading to the East Mediterranean. It's also worth pointing out, though, that we've been building up our defensive capability there for a number of weeks. So F-35s at our bases in Cyprus, Typhoon fighters in Qatar.
The Royal Navy deployment, Mr. Murray.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the wider perspective about
what defensive capability we need.
Well, we know that we've now decided that we need to send that extra capability with HMS Dragon, as well as Wildcat helicopters. Right. But that builds on the defensive capability that we've been building up in the past few weeks.
Lastly, headline writers are very excited that someone the other side of the Atlantic, President Donald Trump, sees Sir Keir Starmer as no Winston Churchill. How do you react to that? How disappointed are you in that? How fair is that withering assessment? Mr. Murray.
Well, look, President Trump has expressed, you know, his disagreement with the decision that we took about not joining the initial strikes on Iran at the weekend. But that was the right decision, and it was a wise decision that the Prime Minister took. You know, you can see how seriously he takes these decisions. These decisions about what to do when it comes to military action are so important, and you can see how important it is for him. And he decided that we were not going to get involved in that offensive action. When Iran then attacked indiscriminately other countries in the region and British nationals were a threat, the Prime Minister rightly decided that we were going to protect British nationals.
Will this upset him? Will President Trump's words upset him?
The Prime Minister's just focused on getting on with the job.
Will it upset him, do you imagine?
No, look, the Prime Minister's not, I think whatever, you know, whatever words are said, what's important for the Prime Minister is the decisions he has to take. And you can see in the conflict in the Middle East, he's taken the wise decisions. So I think British people will understand and feel, you know, it is right and in our national interest that we don't get involved in the offensive war, in the initial strikes on Iran over the weekend. But then when British nationals are at risk and we need to do something to protect them, there are some 300,000 British nationals in the region, that we then do that. And that's exactly what the Prime Minister has decided.
A strong spring statement, which is underscoring the position taken by the government and the economy if we are to weather the storm from the Middle East, as outlined by James Murray, Chief Secretary of the Treasury. Thank you for your input. You've taken us to 3 after 8. Let's get the LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. The Foreign Office says priority will be given to the most vulnerable. The plane will leave the Omani capital Muscat at 7 p.m. UK time. Tamsin Davis has been holidaying in Abu Dhabi and has spoken to LBC.
It's very unclear what support there is for British nationals. This morning we received an email saying, well, there'll be a flight from Muscat, and if you've told us you're in Oman, we'll get in touch with you. I think you've told me to follow local advice and to stay put and to not travel to Oman, as it's a country you've just none but essential travel, and I'm not there.
Sir Keir Starmer will move to defend his decisions on the Iran conflict when he faces MPs at Prime Minister's questions later. President Trump has intensified his criticism in recent days of Sir Keir for initially refusing to let the US use UK military bases. He's described the Prime Minister as no Winston Churchill. Speaking to Nick, the government minister, James Murray, has given his reaction to President Trump's recent comments.
These decisions about what to do when it comes to military action are so important, and you can see how important it is for him. And he decided that we were not going to get involved in that offensive action. When Iran then attacked indiscriminately other countries in the region and British nationals were a threat, the Prime Minister rightly decided that we were going to protect British nationals.
Upset him?
The US says it's struck nearly 2,000 targets in Iran since Saturday when it started its joint campaign with Israel. The American military says Tehran has launched more than 500 ballistic missiles and drones in return. President Trump has said the US Navy will escort tankers through the Strait of Hormuz if necessary to protect international oil supplies. The shipping routes have been effectively closed by Iran's threats to target vessels, causing a sharp rise in gas and oil prices. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will meet North Sea industry bosses later to discuss concerns. And one other story for you this morning. The government is to stop issuing student visas to people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. The Home Office says the visas are being used by people who then claim asylum when in the UK. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,484. It closed down 295 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, staying largely dry and sunny for most through today. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Don't know what it's like in your house, but keeping everyone entertained can be a nightmare. Take the pressure off with EE's award-winning TV and broadband bundles with Netflix Now, TNT Sports and more. Get full fibre broadband and EE will give you their most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard. So everyone can stream their films, series and keep tabs on the scores at the same time. Switch to EE TV and broadband today.
New BT Group customers only. 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
6 minutes after eight on Wednesday, March the 4th. Let's get straight into the conversation after that slightly extended interview with the Chief Secretary of the Treasury. Now, if you're listening to yesterday's show, you'll remember we reported on those two newspaper interviews the President gave to the Daily Telegraph and to The Sun, in which he attacked Sir Keir over Britain's hesitance to back US military action in Iran. The tensions came to the boiling point in the Oval Office yesterday. President Trump was hosting German Chancellor Friedrich Merz and continued with those attacks.
By the way, I'm not happy with the UK either. That island that you read about, the lease, okay, he made it for whatever reason. He made a lease of the island. Somebody came and took it away from him. And it's taken 3-4 days for us to work out where we can land there. It would have been much more convenient landing there as opposed to flying many extra hours. So we are very surprised. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with.
And it didn't end there.
This is not the age of Churchill. I will say the UK has been very, very uncooperative with that stupid island that they have, that they gave away and took a 100-year lease, having to do with perhaps indigenous people claiming the island that never even saw the island before. What's that all about? And they ruin relationships. It's a shame.
I mean, one could argue that Donald Trump is no FDR, but just how important a figure was Winston Churchill? Now, later in the show, we're getting in and among our younger listeners or younger people on the streets of London to ask what his greatest achievement was. But first, as ever, when faced with a tricky historical conundrum, there's one person to whom I turn. Professor Saul David, military historian, Sunday Times best-selling author, co-host of the Battleground podcast. I might have told you before, Professor, both my parents did their bit in the Second World War. Dad served in the army, Mum joined the police because they all had to do their bit. And I remember Mum telling me as a small boy that effectively Winston Churchill saved the world. Now, are you going to disabuse me of the view of my late mother? And if so, do it delicately. Professor, good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and you'll be glad to hear I'm not going to. I mean, let's take ourselves back, listeners, back to the moment that Churchill becomes Prime Minister on the 10th of May 1940. Things are looking really grim. Poland's fallen to the Nazis, so is Scandinavia. And actually, on the day he becomes Prime Minister, the Germans invade the Low Countries and France. And we know how that's going to end up. It's going to end up with Dunkirk. So what does Churchill do immediately? He immediately forms a government of national unity, giving cabinet post to men from all three main parties. Clement Attlee, the leader of the Labour Party, becomes his deputy. Now, it's interesting, Nick, that at this point, a lot of people weren't convinced by Churchill. They thought it was a bit of a loose cannon, shouldn't have become Prime Minister. His response, as he wrote later, was, "Last, I had the authority to give direction over the whole scene. I felt as if I were walking with destiny and that all my past life had been but a preparation for this hour and this trial." And he didn't just talk, Nick. We know that just a couple of weeks later, as Dunkirk is taking place, it's all looking incredibly grim. Members of his own cabinet are saying, "We've got to do a deal with the Germans. It's the only way out." And he stood firm. He said, "No, I'll talk to my chiefs of staff. If there's a way we can hold out against the Germans, we're going to do so." They say, "As long as the Air Force stays intact, we can prevent an invasion." And from that point on, Britain leads the charge to liberate Europe. It's true that later on, as part of the special relationship, which you referred to, Nick, we need the Americans to come in. But it was Britain standing strong on the edge of Europe, and Churchill, the main man in that standing strong, that actually ultimately leads to the liberation of Europe. And it's interesting, you don't just have to take my word for it, all the words of your parents either, Nick. In 2002, there was a poll conducted by the BBC to find the greatest Briton, and who won by a country mile? Winston Churchill.
Let me ask you this, Saul. What was his, decades on, historians such as yourself, you've pored over this, what was his particular skill set?
Well, it was interesting. He talked about, you know, the destiny, that all my, as I mentioned that quote, all my past life had been but a preparation for this hour and this trial. And he was absolutely right. He was hugely experienced. He'd held every great office of state and perfectly equipped for the challenge to come. No other single politician could have done what he did over the next few years. It cost him his health, Nick. He had singleness of purpose, was calm under pressure, and had learned from mistakes. He was the perfect man for the actual time of desperation, because things could not have looked grimmer, as I've already pointed out, when he became Prime Minister. He was perfect. As a peacetime Prime Minister, not so successful, Nick. But for what he did for Britain and Europe, and indeed the world, during the Second World War, he deserves to be considered one of our greatest, if not our greatest Briton.
Lastly, and briefly, if you can, you won't thank me for the brief request to be brief. What does history tell us about the conflict in Iran now, Iran that was once Persia?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, isn't it? We Britain's had a long connection with Iran, mainly because we controlled their oil at one point. It's not a particularly glorious history, of course, because it was an exploitative relationship. We very much backed, as so did the Americans, the Shah's regime, which is a pretty wicked regime. But in 1979, the revolution, they got something a lot worse. You know, I'm not saying that what the Americans are doing now is necessarily a good thing, because we don't know how it's going to turn out. But to see the back of this murderous, terrorist-supporting regime, I don't think there will be many people in this country who will be shedding too many tears over what's happening at the moment, Nick.
Always enjoy our conversation. Thanks for bearing out what my late mum said. Saul David, Professor Saul David, military historian, Sunday Times best-selling author, co-host of the Battleground podcast, 13 after 8. Listen to that, Gideon Rackman, who's chief foreign affairs commentator at the Financial Times. Gideon, there's, I would imagine, the list of issues to confront within number 10 is pretty long. How high up the list or low down the list should President Trump's assessment of Starmer being no Churchill be in your book? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Well, I don't think, you know, the comment itself would be, I mean, it's possibly a political problem, but it's not really a foreign policy problem. But I think that there's a broader issue, which is that Starmer, who built a pretty good relationship with Trump under difficult circumstances in the first few months of the administration, has now had a series of rows with the U.S., some of them less high profile. There was the one that Trump mentioned yesterday, the Chagos. There was Britain's refusal to give British intelligence for these strikes on boats in the Caribbean because we thought they might be war crimes. There was a row over Trump's comments over British soldiers in Afghanistan, which were demeaning. There was a row over Greenland. So there's now a bit of a pattern. The special relationship, if that's what you want to call it, is in trouble, although I would argue it's mainly because of actions that Trump is taking that the British government, for understandable reasons, find pretty hard to endorse.
Isn't the reality over the special relationship, Gideon, it's only special until either party thinks the other isn't doing what they require? I point you to the Falklands or the issues we have now in Iran. Gideon.
Yeah, look, I think the reality is that there have always been disagreements, but I think there is a special relationship, actually. But it's not really based on sentiment. It's based on very intense security cooperation. British nuclear weapons are essentially reliant on American technology, and the intelligence services, the CIA and MI6, have worked together very, very closely, more closely than any other intelligence agencies in the world. So that is special, but the politics of it go up and down.
Lastly, how much should Sir Keir care about Trump's view and Sir Winston Churchill?
Look, America's an important place, so we need, if we can, to get on with it. And we need American support for Ukraine, which is one reason that he's really been trying not to antagonize Trump for some time. But, you know, you can be the judge of the politics. My sense is that politically, it's actually probably a good idea for Starmer not to get too close to Trump on this war. It's not clear that it's going to go well. It's not clear that British interests are at stake. And I think, you know, even in the United States, there's only 29% support for this war. So I doubt British people are clamoring for the UK to send troops or to get more deeply involved.
Gideon, thanks for your time. Line's starting to go at the end, so perfect timing. We will bid you farewell. Gideon Rachman, Chief Foreign Affairs Commentator at the Financial Times. Coming up, your view. How concerned? Because I think you can certainly make the case that Donald Trump is no FDR. But what of this assertion concerning Sir Winston Churchill? And do young people know who he is?
As President Trump says Starmer is no Winston Churchill over the Iran strikes, I'm LBC's Henry Riley asking students what they know about our former wartime Prime Minister.
16 minutes after 8, let's get the latest LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. A government minister has told Nick that Sir Keir Starmer won't be upset by President Trump's latest criticism over the UK's decision-making on the Iran conflict. And the government is to stop issuing student visas to people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most, some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are severe delays on the M25. Clockwise, there's a lane closed on the entry slip road at Junction 6 for Godstone. A lorry has broken down, so the queues start around Junction 5 for the M26. There are also queues on the M25 clockwise because a car has broken down at Junction 13 for Staines, so two lanes are closed. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are queues from Junction 28 for the A12 to Junction 27 for the M11 after a car broke down earlier. There are queues in Basildon on the A13. Westbound is partly blocked because of an accident between the Five Bells interchange and the Stamford La Hope turn-off. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the entire Bakerloo line. That's after there were some problems with the signals earlier. And there's disruption to flights in and out of City Airport. It's because of the foggy weather conditions.
LBC.
My mum, a legend to the end. A tough time, made easier by Co-op Funeral Care. A proper chat over a cuppa, a few classic mumisms, that camping trip in Skegness. And we've got it. A brilliant goodbye that felt right.
We're here in your community to guide, support, or simply talk things through. However you choose to say goodbye, we help you own it. Co-op. Owned by you, right by you. Search Co-op Funeral Care for your nearest funeral home.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Whether your dreams involve epic adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a Jet2 holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a Jet2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Aptra National Protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Just coming up on 20 minutes after 8, how concerned should this Keir Starmer be about that conversation and the points made by Donald Trump in the Oval Office? Tony's in Fareham. Tony, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Starmer doesn't need any lessons on loyalty from Trump. Trump is the same man who ordered his US UN ambassador to vote with Russia, North Korea, and Iran against condemnation of the illegal invasion of Ukraine, if you remember. His Secretary of State, Rubio, spends his time sucking up to NATO's only fly in the ointment, Orban, while his Secretary of Defense slags off long-term allies. It's clear to me that the Israelis are the ones calling the shots in the Middle East, and that there is no plan.
The president
if the regime
said
remains in place.
The president said yesterday that he kind of spooked Israel into doing it.
I think it's the other way around, really. To be perfectly honest with you, the Israelis are the ones that are doing probably the most damage, I would suggest. But the problem is that there is no plan, Nick. What happens if the Remain remains in place, which is quite likely because they've just elected Khomeini's deputy as his son?
What do you imagine the likelihood is that will be recognised by the US?
The US has a long history of getting involved in the Middle East, where the Arabs and others outlast them. From Vietnam to Iraq, you only have to look at history. There is no plan. That's the problem. That's my problem. I agree that the Iranian regime was evil and needed removing.
And I'm not saying this is the right course, because only time will tell, and the initial signs aren't necessarily that encouraging, but what would have been the correct course then, Tony?
To inform allies and put a fleet of ships in covered with air cover in the Straits of Hormuz to cover any.
That's going to bring about more conflict, isn't it?
Well, it faces Iran down with the united front, and that's what is not happening at the moment. You've got division in NATO already, and you've got two nations. Whatever one thinks of Netanyahu and Trump, who is regarded by many as a loose cannon.
Tony, thanks for your assessment of that. We'll have more calls on that. Ben, you will be the next caller, but 8:22. Let's go to other, all somewhat related issues. And a senior diplomat has resigned from the Foreign Office, claiming the government is being constrained on Cyprus and the Chagos Islands by strict interpretations of international law. Amir Kotecha stepped down from his post as head of Palestinian issues at the British Embassy in Tel Aviv this week saying the civil service had been mired in a culture of dysfunction and reduced to, from a Rolls-Royce to, in his words, a banged-up hatchback. Amir Kotecha joins us now. Thank you for coming on, sir. Expand on that. How long have you been working there? And what can tell you? What can you tell me about what you obviously see as the decline over the years? Morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. So I joined the Foreign Office and the Diplomatic Service in 2015. So did 11 years. I became the head of the British Consulate in Russia. And then, as you just noted, my final role was in the embassy in Tel Aviv. But I left yesterday. And the reason I did that was because I think the Foreign Office has serious problems. And frankly, I'd go so far as to say, isn't up to the task at the moment. So I think we need to do things differently, and I want to make that case from the outside.
Okay. Elaborate, if you would, on those serious problems. What are they as you witness them?
So I think we're focused on peripheral issues, corporate issues, insular issues, woke issues, to use that term. I talk in the piece about, you know, 5 years ago being invited.
Well, this is your column in the Times. Five years ago, you talk about what happened as Kabul fell to the Taliban. Tell the listeners what you were involved in.
I was invited to a World Afro Day celebration, and this invite went to several thousand officials across government. There was a panel with six or seven officials on it, including a director charged with national security. And this was all happening as Kabul was falling to the Taliban, with all of the national security implications for the UK that involved. And it was not an isolated incident. And, you know, as again, I say in the Times column, that this week, as war rages across the Middle East, the main story on the internal intranet of the Foreign Office is about some corporate toolkit and how everyone in the Foreign Office should be seizing the chance to advance their self-development. I mean, these are not isolated incidents. We're hopelessly focused on these peripheral issues, and it's all to the neglect of the core of what the Foreign Office is meant to be there for, which is defending British interests abroad.
How much does it, and you give other instances, how to improve productivity with the use of AI, senior colleagues more concerned with the need for an environmental impact assessment than for any proposed gains. Does this in some way, and I know we're talking about the Defence Department here, but does this in some way speak to why we have the warship we want to get down to Cyprus still tied up in Portsmouth?
Well, quite. I mean, and you know, it's been clear to everyone, including, to their credit, the British Embassy in Tel Aviv, that this war was coming. So I frankly don't understand why ministers have been caught so unawares, and why we don't have any naval capabilities in the region. But, you know, I think it speaks to this wider point that we're not relentlessly focused on the key foreign policy issues of the day. We're distracted by things that are, frankly, taking up ever increasing amounts of senior officials' time. I mean, I would, just to sort of give a rough estimate of it, I would say a quarter, a third, maybe even half of the time of senior officials in the Foreign Office is now spent on these internal corporate issues. The fact that we've had this merger with DFID has not helped that. You know, for years now, we've been wrangling over internal terms and conditions and how to align pay and all of these other corporate things. And we've taken our eye off the ball, I think, when it comes to the key foreign policy issues of the day. And we're now seeing the results of that.
How would you describe morale among your former colleagues?
Well, I think it's bad. But, you know, I have been heartened this morning on the back of my Times piece to have colleagues reach out to me and say they agree. You know, there are good people in the Foreign Office who do want to be focused on foreign policy. And the problem is that increasingly it feels like, you know, we're focusing on everything but the really meaty foreign policy issues. So, you know, that's in my view the problem.
We even have, I note from your article, we even have the work from home culture. Why is it that some of our diplomats choose that they want to work from home, Mr. Kotecha?
Well, look, I mean, the aim across government, including the Foreign Office, is for civil servants to spend 60% of their time in the office. I mean, in my view, even that is generous, probably too generous. You know, it means that they're spending 2 days a week at home. But even that has not been enough. I mean, I had an incredibly demoralizing conversation, or indeed set of conversations, with some colleagues, former international development colleagues, who tried to justify their decision to spend most of their time at home on the basis that they didn't want to work in a colonial office building. Now, you know, if you don't want to work in the palatial splendor of King Charles Street, then frankly, you shouldn't be working for that organization. But I do think actually it points to a wider issue, which is that most, or indeed a lot of international development colleagues, DFID colleagues, they saw themselves less as British officials, less as crown servants, and more as international aid workers, humanitarian workers. And it has been a very difficult cultural fit, I think, for some of them when the merger happened, because they now have to see themselves as serving the British taxpayer and serving British interests. And I think, frankly, some of them find that a bit difficult.
Now freed from Foreign Office strictures, does the Chagos deal make sense?
No, it doesn't. And the frustrating thing here is that it's possible, using international law, to construct a very credible, very strong legal argument for why it does not make sense and why we have no obligation to give away the Chagos Islands. As all of your listeners probably now know, the ICJ ruling on the matter was totally non-binding. It was only advisory. We seem to be straitjacketed by international law. Lord Hermer, the Foreign Secretary, the PM, they seem to have a very narrow, rigid view of international law. And that seems to lead to these absurd decisions, frankly, where we're looking at giving away sovereign British territory. And, you know, I don't think there is any credible reason to do it. I hope that the deal is dead. But let's see. It does seem to me that the Prime Minister is very determined to get it over the line, even now.
And again, freed from Foreign Office strictures, as someone who was head of Palestinian issues at the British Embassy in Tel Aviv, where do you see the conflict now in Iran going over the next 72 hours, weeks, please God, months? Amir Kotecha.
Well, look, the conflict is raging on. Indeed, it's expanding. The Israelis have been striking as Lebanon, and there's continuing to be missiles falling across the region and drones. I don't think it's going to be over any time soon. What I would say, though, is that these are long-standing, important allies of ours, not just the Americans, but also the Israelis, the Gulfies, and the Emiratis. And I think that they are, frankly, appalled by our inconstancy in the face of the current crisis. We've been umming and ahhing about what support we should give. And I think that the government should be far more full-throated in not only defending sovereign British territory in the form of our base in Cyprus, and it is sovereign British territory, unlike most bases, is actually British soil. So we should not only be more forthright in defending that, but we should also be coming to the defence, moral defence, but also practical defence of Israeli, Gulfi and Emirati partners.
Fascinating talking to you. I'm already late to the news. Final question, briefly, if you can. What next for Amir Kotecha?
Well, look, Nick, I'm hoping to have more news on that in the coming weeks. I do want to do something to try and fix the system, because it's not just the Foreign Office, it's actually Whitehall in general. There is a problem of incentives, of these civil service behaviours that guide recruitment and promotion. Effectively, it doesn't matter what you know about a subject, so long as you could talk a good game and have difficult conversations or know how to develop yourself and others. I mean, these civil service behaviours, frankly, have been the ruin of the system for the last few years. And so I want to do something to try and fix the civil service.
I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I hope maybe we can talk to you again as a foreign affairs commentator. Perhaps we'll discuss that with one of my colleagues. Amir Kotecha, thank you. Former head of Palestinian issues at the British Embassy in Tel Aviv, pointing out on the day that Kabul fell, there was a World Afro Day for him and his colleagues, and during the Cyprus conflict on the weekend, The necessary website was urging staff to take charge of your development. Tells us where we are, where we are. 8.32, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told LBC Keir Starmer won't be upset by President Trump's latest criticism of his decision-making on the Iran conflict. Donald Trump says he's not happy with the UK and has described the Prime Minister as no Winston Churchill. The Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray's told Nick Keir is just focused on getting on with the job. A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. The Foreign Office says priority will be given to the most vulnerable, who will be contacted directly. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will meet with North Sea industry bosses later over concerns about soaring gas and oil prices. Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz, which is a vital shipping route. In other news this morning, people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan are to be banned from applying to study in the UK. The government says too many nationals from those countries go on to claim asylum. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Has Trump dumped Starmer or has Starmer dumped Trump? Either way, the special relationship is looking distinctly unspecial right now over America's attack on Iran.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is, and London is different at night time.
It's a celebration of life and it gives hope, being able to raise money for Cancer Research UK.
Step towards a brighter future and sign up at shinewalk.org. Together, we are beating cancer.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Simone combined her old pensions with PensionBee.
So I had multiple pensions from various jobs that I have been in, and every 6 months or so I would receive a statement, and I was losing track of all my different pensions and all the different statements. I just wanted one easy way of keeping them all in one place.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8.36, confession there. I went far longer with Amir Kotecha than was planned. The producer's furious with me, but what a fascinating conversation. We've got a ship tied up in Portsmouth that certainly should be halfway to Cyprus, if not there already. But on the weekend that was all kicking off, the relevant intranet, as it's called, the internal intranet at the Foreign Office, was talking about the new capability framework and urging staff to take charge of your development. Meanwhile, and I keep stressing this, the sovereign base in Cyprus was under attack. No wonder he wants to be a whistleblower. Ben's in Dubai, appropriate enough. Yep. Ben, how was it peaceful or otherwise has it been for you for the last 24 hours? I repeat, the last 24 hours.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, the last 24 hours have been better. But we've still had over 100 missiles and drones that have come ahead. There have been less sort of loud explosions,
right.
But we have seen a constant circling of jet fighters and such like, which is pretty unnerving.
On the ground, how much was life disrupted? How much has life returned to the normality that you enjoy?
So we are visiting Dubai on holiday. We only had 24 hours under normal circumstances. Oh. No, absolutely fine, Nick. So we had 24 hours of normal circumstances. So I can only judge it from that. But it's been completely different. The roads have been quiet. The people from just looking from our hotel window, there's been a lot less numbers of people that have been out. I must admit, credit to the delivery drivers who are continually working for these companies to deliver. Credit to them, and they deserve a big tip. But from our perspective, the way that the operations have changed here have been dramatic. One must credit the UAE government in the information that they've provided us. They've been very consistent with the numbers of missiles and drones that have come across. So credit where credit is due.
Now, when are you due to come home?
We were last night due to come home on Friday, this coming Friday. That has now been cancelled, and we've now got a new flight that is due on Monday morning.
And does the local government pay for the hotel and accommodation? Does the British Foreign Office... Who pays now for those two extra days? Three extra days?
We actually booked a package holiday, so it's the travel provider that is providing the additional accommodation. We have spoken to guests in the hotel that haven't got that luxury, and the UAE government have confirmed that they will actually pay for all of their costs associated, food and water and such like. So they are protected under the UAE government.
First time you've been to Dubai?
It's the first time we've ever been, and possibly the last.
I was going to ask, and I've been there a few times, and I'm very, very sorry, because it's not my favourite holiday destination, but it should be very relaxing, and they should just effectively turn on the sunshine the minute you open your curtains in the bedroom. But sadly, my friend, that's not what you've had, is it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the first night it was actually my partner's birthday, and so we went out for a lovely meal, we've all of a sudden, from where our table was sat, we could see missiles being shot out of the air.
Oh.
So from us, it was extremely unnerving, as you can imagine. So from us, it's just an absolute focus to be able to return back to the UK. But unfortunately, the guidance that the UK government and embassy have been providing has been very conflicting, and has actually caused more frustrations more than anything else. So from us, it's just an absolute priority to get home in any way possible.
Lastly, what is your, and I totally defer to you because you're there, you're so close to the action, what will be your main takeaway as you and your partner hopefully get on that jet on Monday and tour your seats to the upright position, put on your seatbelts and take off? What will be your overriding impression?
Well, just the fortunate that we've been able to get out of here. But I think for us going forward, any kind of destination that we're looking to go to anywhere in the world, Dubai has been known as one of the safest areas or has been classed as that. Absolutely unbelievable, the events that we've seen over the past couple of days. But from us, the absolute priority is getting back into UK soil.
The Lake District next time. How about that, Ben?
Absolutely. Sounds good to me.
Happy landings. Thanks for reporting in from Dubai. If you, like Ben, are in Dubai or anywhere in the region, either through work, through home, through holidays, like Ben and his partner there, do give us a call. We'll take the calls anyway through, because it is interesting, I think, if you're there, if in the UAE or wherever else you might be. But we come to events. Well, I was going to say events in the UK, but sadly, in a sense, it's the departure of UK. So Michael Moritz, one of the UK's richest men. Now, before you start saying, oh, well, if he doesn't want to stay, let him go, it's worth telling you he's a venture capitalist. He's invested early in businesses that have gone on to employ thousands and thousands of people. So pay people's wages, mortgages, rent and everything else. But up with this, he will not put. He's a businessman and he's getting out of here.
Britain's an uncomfortable place for Jews today. Anti-Semitism is always in the air, it's always in the water, it's always in the atmosphere. It's got a history of 2,000 years. It's not going to change. Because of my Jewish ancestry, I'm allowed to apply for German citizenry. It's the one place in Europe where what happened 100 years ago forms a very central part of the educational system. It gives me some mild form of reassurance.
Sir Michael lost his grandparents in the Holocaust. He's rated in the Sunday Times rich list. They estimate his value is worth to be in the region of £4.5 billion. Imagine how, just on a financial issue, just imagine how much tax has just walked out of the door because the government, I sense, is not doing as much as it could to clamp down on anti-Semitism. He talks about how, and I quote, kids in northwest London who no longer wear their school blazers, obviously referring to children who attend Jewish schools. All of this will be of great interest and, I imagine, concern to Stephen Silverman. He's Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Joins me now. How many cases such as Sir Michael's are you hearing then? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Look, it's just so sad. As a proud Brit and someone who's always been incredibly grateful to have been born in this country, It does not give me any pleasure to say that it's hard to fault his logic. You know, anti-Semitism was already rising 10 years ago. That genie got out of the bottle during Jeremy Corbyn's stewardship of the Labour Party. But if you look at what has happened over the last 2 years since Hamas went on its genocidal rampage of rape, torture, murder and kidnapping in southern Israel, Every survey shows that anti-Semitism has risen to unprecedented levels. Jews are less than 0.5% of the population. They are nine times more likely than any other faith group to be victims of hate crime. We've had weekly hate marches through urban centres calling for the eradication of Israel, the only place that Jews can be certain of finding safe haven if things do spiral out of control. You've had this destructive, toxic alliance of radical leftists and Islamist extremists who have been given free rein to radicalize people into believing that it is a moral stance to hate the entire population of the world's sole Jewish state, not just its government, its entire population, and also, therefore, to hate anyone who refuses to disavow it. This isn't normal. And now we've got groups of activists in a growing number of cities knocking on doors to check who is willing to get on board with that hatred and meticulously recording the names of every decent person who refuses to have anything to do with it. And of course, most tragically, Jews have been murdered on the streets of Manchester in an Islamist terrorist attack. Our most recent polling shows that 51% of Jews are now questioning whether or not they have a future in this country. It's hardly surprising.
Mr. Silberman, you referenced Jeremy Corbyn. Sakir and his supporters would point to the fact that he did a lot to try and rid the Labour Party of the scourge of anti-Semitism. Question one, how successful was he? Question two, what does he need to do now he's in power with reference to this issue?
Keir Starmer said he was going to tear out anti-Semitism by its roots. Those roots are thicker and deeper than ever, and they are threatening to strangle the life out of Jewish life in this country. Successive governments have been inept in addressing this growing problem, but the current government has been in power for most of this period during which Jew hatred has become increasingly normalised. They've done nothing tangible to address it. Even now, they still haven't proscribed the Islamic Republican Guard Corps. You know, it looks to British Jews like defending them in the face of this avalanche of anti-Semitism just isn't a priority for this government.
Lastly, we're speaking as it's reported in one newspaper, The Times, at least 15 Islamic student societies at different universities across the United Kingdom have been having services to mourn the death of the Ayatollah on Saturday. What does that tell you about the university situation for Jewish students?
I think what a lot of people don't understand is that what we're seeing is the coming to fruition of something that was begun by the Soviet Union in the 1970s. Something, a form of anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism that was spread throughout the global left, predominantly through academia. It has really succeeded. And unless this government is willing to actually take strong action to back up its warm thoughts and words, the whole country is headed into a very, very tragic place.
Grateful for your time this morning, Stephen Silverman. Thank you. You're Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. We might take some of your calls on that. Coming up in the next hour, we go back to those comments made by Donald Trump concerning Sir Keir Starmer and Winston Churchill. And LBC's Henry Riley has been asking students in central London what they believe Winston Churchill's actual legacy is.
We're asking people what you think Churchill's greatest legacy was. I know it's first thing in the morning. What would you say?
Mate, honestly, I'm sure that's
a good start, isn't it? Stay tuned after nine when we'll get even more searing insights. 8:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that Sir Keir Starmer won't be upset by President Trump's latest criticism of his decision-making on the war in Iran. A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. And people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan are to be banned from applying to study in the UK. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are severe delays on the M25 clockwise. There's one lane blocked on the entry slip road at Junction 6 for Godstone because a lorry has broken down, so it's taking around an hour to queue from Junction 5 for the M26. There are also queues on the M25 anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel from Junction 2 for the A2 after an accident earlier. There are queues on the A2 westbound. It's partly blocked before Dartford Heath because of an accident. There are delays in Basildon on the A13 westbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident between the Five Bells interchange and the Stamford La Hope turn-off. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line after some problems with the signals earlier at Lambeth North, and there's disruption to flights at Luton and London City airports. It's because of the foggy weather conditions.
LBC.
Breakups, that's a tricky one. That's why EE is the only major provider who'll give you up to £300 to switch. You'll get full fibre, but you'll also get EE's most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard, so the whole house can do more, like streaming that series whilst your work calls stay crystal clear. Switch to EE today.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New BT Group customers only. 62% availability terms apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope being able to raise money for Cancer Research UK.
Step towards a brighter future and sign up at shinewalk.org. Together, we are beating cancer.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
So much to discuss, and remember, in the next hour we're coming to, we've been in among young people. When you ask them, what was Sir Winston Churchill's greatest achievement? What was his legacy? Well, sadly, the results in so far do not speak that well, but we'll continue with that. Also asking the next down the light of President Trump's views, the King's visit, still to go ahead. Another important role for the King. Never, ever lose sight of how crucial the monarch, the King now, that it can be in these instances. Is that the way to put the special relationship back? And as I've said before, I sense we'd be speaking so much more about our next conversation had we not got these concerning events in the Middle East. And that is the spring statement that we heard from the Chancellor yesterday, effectively trying to tell us that it's roughly going the direction it's headed. Despite my conversation with one of our senior colleagues, James Murray, unemployment is up at a near 10-year high. Growth is all but stagnant and, of course, hugely susceptible to events in the Middle East. But let's bring into the conversation the Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, Samuel Stride, who joins me now. Samuel, good to have you on board, and we will explore more matters. I wonder if we could first come to an aspect I did explore with James Murray as well. The front page of the Daily Express, 1 million more will pay tax on state pensions. They would appear to inadvertently have been dragged in by a possible miscalculation by the Chancellor. A, can you just give the background and elaborate, and B, your view on that. Samuel, good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. So let's start with my view. It's totally wrong. People that have retired and worked hard, you know, they want dignity in retirement. They don't want to start getting taxed when they wouldn't otherwise have been taxed at all. In terms of why it's happened, one, it's because Rachel Rees has extended the freeze of the tax thresholds, including the lower tax threshold, meaning more and more people, as the state pension rises, are getting dragged into it. We, in the last election, Nick, went into that last election with something called the triple lot plus, and the plus bit meant that we would have increased that threshold in line with the triple lot to make sure that that didn't happen. So I'm afraid this is just one further example of what happens when you mismanage an economy, overtax an economy, get that sluggish growth that you just referred to. I'm afraid people pay the price, including some of our elderly and most vulnerable.
So, we heard from the Chancellor that we've got the right economic plan, we're on the right economic footing, and working people are better off. Your view on that, Samel?
Utterly deluded, Nick. Utterly deluded. I mean, look, what the OBR said was they've downgraded growth for this year quite substantially. You mentioned unemployment. They say that unemployment will be higher than they previously forecast this year, next year, the year after, and we've got this anemic growth. What she should have been doing is coming forward with a clear plan to start increasing growth. And that means getting on top of public spending, particularly welfare, getting people off benefits and into work. And if you do that, and we set out £47 billion worth of savings at our conference recently, if you do that, then you can drive down the deficit, get on top of the debt, but at the same time start to get taxes down, particularly on businesses and employment, so you can get growth going.
I challenge James Murray on the problem. It's a problem for everyone, but I think you'll share with me it's a desperate problem for young people. Some of our younger, my younger listeners have never been in employment, and they're not in education, and they're not in training. James Murray made the assertion that in part is down to the groundwork led by the previous disastrous Conservative administration with policies that discouraged that. How would you respond to that claim?
Look, under the last Conservative government, youth unemployment declined by over 40%. Under the previous Labour government, not this one, but the previous Labour government, youth unemployment went up by about the same amount, over 40%. And the problem is that Labour do not understand basic economics and how businesses work. And if you make it more expensive to employ people and riskier, particularly young people, you will get less employment. And the way they've done that is they jacked up national insurance, which is a jobs tax. They put up they reduced the threshold of that tax so it kicks in earlier, which affects lower paid workers, typically younger workers. They brought in employment legislation that is now making it very risky to take people on, particularly those who don't have a track record in employment. And that, of course, is also younger people. Younger people are getting a desperately bad deal from this government.
And yet, when you talk with Labour politicians, they will point to the fact that the economy needed to be put on a secure footing after Liz Truss economics, Samel.
Well, that was a while ago, and I have been very clear on what I thought of what happened at that time. I said it before it happened, on the day that it happened in the House of Commons and afterwards, which was that mistakes were made then. But look, we're not living in the Liz Truss era now. We're living in the Kenny Badenoch era, and what we stand for is living within our means, being fiscally responsible, controlling public spending so we can get the debt down. That's really important. Always funding every commitment that we come forward with. But that will include significant tax cuts. We've said that we'll abolish stamp duty on moving home, on your primary residence. We're giving a £5,000 tax cut to young people on their first job. And we've said that we'll take hundreds of thousands of businesses in our high streets out of business rates altogether. Those are things that make people better off, and those are things that help to turbocharge an economy.
Lastly, to move you to another matter, as a senior member of His Majesty's Opposition, it is being reported that HMS Dragon, the destroyer, will set sail at some point this afternoon. This is after the attack on an RAF base, of course, in Cyprus on Saturday. Question one, about the timing and the response. Question two, how concerned should Sir Keir Starmer be with President Trump's words involving Sir Winston Churchill?
So on your first point, Nick, very flat-footed. I mean, look, this vessel should have been over there and on its way some time ago. I mean, we've left it to the French to get there well before us with an aircraft carrier. And what the Cypriots are thinking at the moment, heaven only knows. You know, the reason they're being attacked is that they've got a UK base there, which they thought was there actually to be part of their own security, and yet we can't even get a ship there to back that up. And secondly, in terms of Trump, well, look, Keir Starmer could not have handled this worse. He's finally given access to our bases to the Americans, but in the slow, dithering way that he's done it, he's lost our relationship, at least temporarily, with the US president. Now, in an uncertain and difficult world, that is the most important relationship that our country has. And it just speaks to things like the Chagos Islands. He's given the Chagos Islands away and we're paying...
Well, that deal has to be sunk now, doesn't it?
Well, sure. it may well be. But what all of this speaks to, Nick, is a Prime Minister who is not out there fighting in our national interest. In all three of those examples, the ship that should have been there earlier, the dithering around the loss of the relationship with America, and Chagos as well, all speaks to other people's interests, not to ours.
Samuel Stride, Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, thanks for your time, taking us to 3 minutes before nine. As I said, if you are in the region, the Middle East, we'll take a call from you pretty much any time. Andy is in Dubai. What aspect do you want to explore, Andy? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, good morning. You've just connected me and I hope you can hear me okay. A plane has just gone over my head.
Oh, right.
Hopefully it isn't too noisy. Okay. So all this talk about Trump and Churchill, look, let's just go back a few years. It wasn't too long ago that Churchill was asking FDR for help during World War II and they didn't come forward with that help. Mm-hmm. It works both ways. Really apt comparison. I think that Starmer may not have communicated very well what it was he wanted to do, but he didn't really have a lot of choice. They didn't want to involve him. They didn't want to make use of the special relationship between us and left him on the back foot. That's my view of things.
If you take one final question, and we can hear you well, so don't worry about the aircraft overhead. If you take what the Conservative politicians just said, we live in an ever-changing and quite dangerous world. The relationship, the alliance we have with the United States has arguably never been more important. Is that the way to treat such an alliance, to take the rather loyally legalistic view that Sir Keir did?
The relationship behind the scenes, I don't imagine that has been dented too much. I think on the front line, Trump versus Starmer, I think that relationship is non-existent. When you have a regime such as Trump who uses that term special relationship in and whenever he wishes to do so, you know, when he engaged with Putin, when he engaged with North Korea, he referred to those as special relationships. He uses that term at will. Behind the scenes, I think it's all pretty solid. We share a lot of information. I come from a military background. I see how we collaborate and how we cooperate. The frontline politicians tend to bounce that term around as if it was nothing, and that's the challenge we have here.
Thanks for your time, Andy, calling in from Dubai. Keep your head down and look after yourself. The music means the conversation must move on, but we move on by coming back to those comments from President Donald Trump concerning Sir Keir Starmer and Sir Winston Churchill. LBC's Henry Riley has been asking university students here in central London, what was Churchill's greatest achievement?
The war effort, I guess.
I don't know enough about history, I studied theology.
Plus the drone gang that operates like Deliveroo for prisoners, and...
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
One aspect of the spring statement appears to be that around a million more pensioners will be dragged, poorest pensioners, will be dragged into paying tax. But there is the argument that with the triple lock, while others have fared pretty badly, they've done okay. What is the reality as you see it? Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a government minister has told LBC Sir Keir Starmer won't be upset by President Trump's latest critique of his decision-making on Iran. Donald Trump says he's not happy with the UK and has described the Prime Minister as no Winston Churchill. Mr Trump renewed his verbal attack on Sir Keir last night after he initially blocked the use of military bases. The Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, has told Nick this morning Sir Keir remains unfazed by the remarks.
The Prime Minister is just focused on getting on with the job.
Will it upset him, do you imagine?
No, look, the Prime Minister's not, I think whatever, whatever words are said, what's important for the Prime Minister is the decisions he has to take. And you can see in the conflict in the Middle East, he's taken the wise decisions. So I think British people will understand and feel, it is right and in our national interest that we don't get involved in the offensive war.
A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. The Foreign Office says priority will be given to the most vulnerable. Britain is also preparing to send the warship HMS Dragon to Cyprus to boost defences in the region. Former Conservative Defence Secretary Penny Mordaunt has told Nick she thinks the government's been too slow to act.
Ships should have been deployed weeks ago. We've known this is building up. The US have been building up an armada in the Mediterranean and the Gulf. And I can only conclude, because assets are now being deployed, it wasn't about resourcing. It was that people didn't think to do it.
The Chancellor, Rachel Rees, will meet with North Sea industry bosses later over concerns about soaring gas and oil prices. Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz, which is a vital shipping route. The conflict has caused Asian stock markets to tumble overnight. President Trump says the US Navy will escort oil tankers through the strait if necessary. In other news this morning, the government is to stop issuing student visas to people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. The Home Office says the visas are being used by people who then claim asylum when in the UK. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 19 at 10,464. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Really? The real secret to feeling young, simply living young. And right now you can roll young with £500 off across the SEAT range on top of existing offers, including the fun new SEAT Ibiza and Arona. But this offer won't last forever. Order by the 31st of March. SEAT, rolling young. UK retail customers excluding contract hire, 18 plus. Order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine, Wednesday, March the 4th. Coming up in this hour as we continue with those disobliging comments towards the Prime Minister from President Trump yesterday, we will explore just exactly what is the legacy of Winston Churchill, particularly among our younger listeners. My colleague Henry Riley has been outside a university waiting as students arrive for a day's studies, asking what his greatest achievement, what his, Sir Winston's, greatest achievement was. And also, again, as opposed to those disobliging comments, we are a month or so away from the King's visit to the United States. Will it again fall to the monarch to try and smooth matters over, or should the United Kingdom start making mutterings? Well, if you think the special relationship is in such peril, maybe the King won't visit. You don't want to drag the monarch into politics, but is that something that should be explored? Plus, when prisoners are effectively receiving Deliveroo-style deliveries. Chief Inspector of Prisons Charlie Taylor addressed this last year, talked about how drones are increasingly being used to drop off drugs, mobile phones and other items to prisoners.
What we're seeing is that prisoners are able to drop off packages to specific cells, and those can then be dispersed around the prison very, very quickly as a result.
And back to that spring statement yesterday from Chancellor Rachel Rees, and the view that our poorest pensioners, not immediately, but in about 4 years' time, if they're fortunate enough to still be with us, will be dragged into paying income tax on their state benefits. How fair is this? Shadow Chancellor, the Conservative, Sir Mel Stride, told me in the previous hour,
it's totally wrong. People that have retired and worked hard, you know, they want dignity in retirement. They don't want to start getting taxed when they wouldn't otherwise have been taxed at all.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Now, if you were listening to yesterday's show, you will recall that we were featuring two newspaper interviews, one that had actually taken place and it was on the front pages yesterday. That was for the Daily Telegraph, and then the Sun released theirs, in which President Trump went some of the way as being fairly disparaging about the United Kingdom and Sir Keir Starmer. But, well, they bubbled over, didn't they, in the Oval Office yesterday. The President was hosting German Chancellor Friedrich Merz and launched into this scathing attack on Sir Keir.
By the way, I'm not happy with the UK either. That island that you read about, the lease, okay, he made it for whatever reason, he made a lease of the island. Somebody came and took it away from them. And it's taken 3-4 days for us to work out where we can land there. It would have been much more convenient landing there as opposed to flying many extra hours. So we are very surprised. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with.
And as often the case with President Trump, once he's got a man down, he can't stop kicking.
This is not the age of Churchill. I will say the UK has been very, very uncooperative with that stupid island that they have, that they gave away and took a 100-year lease, having to do with perhaps indigenous people claiming the island that never even saw the island before. What's that all about? And they ruin relationships. It's a shame.
Well, as many of you have been saying, you could say that President Trump is no FDR. But let's come to events here in the UK. We'll be looking at the idea of will it fall to a monarch yet again to try and smooth things out, soothe tensions. We'll look at that with Alexander Larman, journalist and royal author. That's in a moment. But what of this Sir Winston Churchill line, which is resonating across many of the front pages, and it's been a theme of conversation now through last night as well. But we decided to send LBC's Henry Riley to catch up with some students in central London and ask them a few basic questions about the great man, Sir Winston Churchill. Henry Riley joins me now. Morning, Henry.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, President Trump referencing there the former two-time Prime Minister, wartime leader, who actually first proposed the idea of a special relationship with the United States 80 years ago tomorrow alongside President Truman, and has previously been voted the greatest Briton of all time. But as you mentioned, what do students at the Strand campus from King's College London think that Sir Winston Churchill's greatest legacy was, and also his greatest achievement? We're asking people what you think Churchill's greatest legacy was. I know it's first thing in the morning. What would you say?
Mate, honestly, I'm sure.
Great leader. Questionable morals. I think his legacy has changed over the years.
Winston Churchill's greatest achievement was. I know it's first thing in the morning, but what would you say if someone sort of threw that question at you?
The war effort, I guess.
What they think Churchill's greatest achievement was.
Churchill.
What comes to mind? Greatest achievement.
I don't know enough about history, I studied theology.
If someone says Churchill, is there anything you think of? Or we shall fight them on the...
Beaches.
There we go. We're asking people what you think Churchill's greatest achievement was.
I don't know. Obviously rallying people behind the cause to fight the Nazis.
Oh, I have no idea. I did study history on A-levels. No idea.
We're asking people what Churchill's greatest achievement was, in your view.
Nothing, really.
Nothing. Okay, thank you. And Nick, hardly surprising given there was a survey by Policy Exchange a few years ago that found only 1 in 5 British people between the ages of 18 and 24 now had a positive view of Sir Winston Churchill.
Henry, do you think you gave that respondent enough of a clue? We shall fight them on the, and it rhymes with leeches. Shouldn't it just be we shall, and then they might have said overcome? I don't know, we could have got anything then.
Yeah. I know. I was also kicking myself because I misquoted it. I said we shall fight them, where it says we shall fight. So I was slightly kicking myself there.
We shall fight on the beach. Okay, LBC's Henry Riley reporting from central London. We'll come to that. But rather than looking back many decades, shall we look forward a month or so? And that supposed royal visit, yes, to the United States to restore the special relationship? Alexander Larman is a journalist. He wrote Windsors at War and Crown in Crisis and joins me now. Alexander, might it fall to a monarch, in this case the king, to yet again smooth things out between, I suppose, us and our closest ally? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Well, it's a rather difficult situation because the palace has been seeing there could be potential difficulty in the king's visit to America even before all this stuff with Trump kicked off because of what's going on with his brother. So it's already been seen as a slimmed down state visit. It's going to be 3 days, half the length of his mother's, which was 6 days. And so there is very much contingency planning already. And now, of course, the whole thing has been complicated even further.
We read that the Americans are still very keen, very strong on the Queen or King of England, the British royal family. Does that still hold in your book, Alexander?
Well, traditionally, yes, but obviously what you have to bear in mind is that the royal family's reputation has taken a real kicking over the last few weeks because of the Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor stuff. And there is a real worry that if a king goes over to America, he won't be greeted with the usual flag-waving and sycophancy, but with, I think, far greater heckling and far greater hostility than he'd be used to. So there is that reputational risk amongst everything else.
What is the diplomatic procedure? What are the wheels within wheels that operate between the government and a monarch? Obviously, meetings are held between government officials and courtiers. Is it ultimately left to the Prime Minister to say, actually, Your Majesty, we don't think it's in our best interest? How does it actually function, Alexander?
Well, generally speaking, the monarch does what he or she is told. I mean, if you remember, the king wasn't particularly happy about hosting Donald Trump at Balmoral, and he was rather bounced into that. But in this case, it will have been very much the government saying to the king, this is an important diplomatic visit, we'd very much like you to go over to America and conduct this state visit. But of course, the difficulty is that Charles is nobody's patsy. And he's somebody who he's very strong-willed. And if he decides that actually he doesn't want to go anymore, it's going to be exceptionally difficult for quite a lame duck prime minister to convince him that he does have to go.
Lastly, as a royal author, royal watcher, what do you think should happen?
I think he should go. I think that it would be a very, very bad precedent if he didn't go, because I think ultimately you have to say that the crown is above the transitory nature of politics. But whether that's going to be the case still, I don't know.
Great for your time, Alexander Lohman, journalist, and you wrote Windsor's at War and Crown in Crisis. Mark is in Grangemouth. What do you think, and obviously a lot could happen in the coming weeks prior to that visit, but what do you think should happen? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, just listening to the conversation this morning, surely the attack on the Cypriot airbase is an attack on British sovereign state.
It is, so, no question about it, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't see why we're taking a defensive stance and not an offensive stance to find out exactly where this attack came from and reacting on it.
Right. Okay. Well, I imagine the government would say that we, of course, are defending our military personnel and indeed the expats in Cyprus, and that's why this destroyer, is being deployed. I sense what they would say. Mark, how do you respond to that?
I still say that we should be taking more decisive action, Nick, as I say, and plus the fact as well. In my hometown, we've just shut the only oil refinery left in Scotland.
Ah.
And obviously the attacks on Oman and the UAE could influence that. So why did we not do more to save the only refinery left in Scotland?
What is the King's visit next month?
Yeah, definitely should go ahead.
Tell me why.
I think we've got to maintain that relationship. He's got a good relationship. Well, Trump thinks he's got a good relationship with the royalty, and I think that's something we should try and maintain.
Mark, thank you for that. John, you'll be the next caller. Just to give you the background to this, the trip is due as of April the 28th. The King will be accompanied by Queen Camilla. The monarch and his wife will travel to Washington, D.C., to New York, and, when this was published, a third as-yet-unannounced city. So that is what is due to happen. So well over a month, you could almost say in almost 2 months. So much could happen in those weeks, but where are you on the royal visit? We'll come back to that. And, of course, your views on the bringing Churchill into the debate. Let's just do a couple of emails on that, or texts before we go. Linda in Tunbridge, Trump should be glad he's not dealing with Churchill. Churchill was the king of the one-liner and the put-down. A few words which would go down in history would have Trump as toast. Starmer is not Churchill, but he's not a bully's sidekick either. If you're going to commit our military to involvement, you don't do it because your ally has forced your hand and then says you have to join in with their chosen action without involvement in the decision to take that action at the time. What ally throws random tariff threats at you every time he does not get his latest want immediately satisfied? Same subject. This is from Roger. It's ridiculous to compare Sir Keir to Winston. Back then, whatever the BBC said was gospel, so he got full support. There are now over 100 podcasts, radio stations, blogs, bloggers, all giving alternative opinions. Also, what if Sir Keir was warned that taking part would almost certainly lead to a terror attack in London? Your phone-in would then be, was following Trump worth what's happened on the streets of London? Well, remember, we do know that there have been 20, and this is confirmed by the police, 20 attempted assassinations by Iranian agents on UK soil, foiled. 20 in recent years. We'll come back to that conversation. Also, coming up after the news, how prisoners are getting like Deliveroo, like deliveries, in their jails. We'll have more on that. Just turned 9:16, LBC News headline time then. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that Sakir Starmer won't be upset by President Trump's latest criticism of his decision-making on the war in Iran. A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. And people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan are to be banned from applying to study in the UK. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Gough. There are long delays on the M25 clockwise after a lorry broke down earlier at Junction 6 for Godstone, so all the lanes are open now, but there are still queues from Junction 5 for the M26. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are queues to the Dartford Tunnel from Junction 3 for the M20 after an accident earlier, so all the lanes are open there. There are queues in Dartford on the A2 westbound. It's partly blocked at Dartford Heath because of an accident. It's slow in Chertsey. The A317 Pyecroft Road is partly blocked in both directions at Bell Bridge Road. That's because of an accident on the roundabout. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line after some problems with the signals earlier at Lambeth North. And there's disruption to flights at Luton and London City airports. It's because of the foggy weather conditions.
Conflict in the Middle East. Follow live on LBC.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
With over 50 years experience, at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for social, reported on games and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wet suit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Pressure now. Next month's state visit. What should the position be of the British royal family? John in Edinburgh. John, your take. Good morning, sir.
Hi, morning to you. Hi. It will get noticed in the States. It'll be very popular. It will sell newspapers. It will sell probably Hello magazine there. But would it be... Is it defective diplomacy? Don't think so. I think that diplomacy is a very serious business. And I think our method of doing it, our model of doing it, is highly outdated.
What should it be? How should it look in a modern world?
It should be to do with trade missions. And I know that they happen in the background, but they happen very much in the background. And they're overshadowed by the idea that there's a new circus in town, okay? It should be the news that there is a trade delegation. It's a very serious discussion to be pointed to happen.
If you read biographies of former presidents such as Ronald Reagan, former President Bill Clinton, they say that among the highlights of their terms were meeting, in one instance, Nelson Mandela, in both instances, Her Majesty the Queen. I hear what you say, the royal family is a very old institution, but are they not the ultimate door openers for then the folks who do the trade deals to come in effectively on the coattails?
No, because the door is already open. If the Americans want to do trade with Britain, the British want to do trade with America, those doors are already open. I don't doubt for one moment that there was a highlight of meeting.
But you don't get the president necessarily. I think if the Queen, or now if the King turns up in Washington, you are going to get the president, you're going to have the Secretary of State, you're going to have everyone. If you get, without any rudeness, the Secretary of State for Trade or International Development, you don't think you're necessarily going to get the president.
other countries managed to talk to the right officials, Germany, France, Italy, Australia, whatever.
Well, they don't have royal families to deploy, which in Germany's case, do
they? It's amazing how they can do without a royal family, isn't it?
You're not a fan at all, I sense.
Well, I don't see the effectiveness of it. I don't see that it is... Is it newspaper worthy? Yes. Is it effective diplomacy? Not too sure. Probably not.
Grateful for your input, John. Thank you. Let's see if Billy in Greenwich... Actually, I think it's the Royal London Borough of Greenwich. I'm pretty certain it's the Royal London Borough of Greenwich, no? Agrees. Billy, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yes, it is the Royal Borough of Greenwich.
It is the Royal Borough of Greenwich, right. Okay. Congratulations to you. I'm sure it means a lot more on that Greenwich High Street down by Sainsbury's where you can't even get a bicycle through anymore. It's ridiculous what they've done down there.
I wanted to speak about Iran and just how precarious the situation could develop to be.
Yep.
I don't think people quite understand that 20% of the world's oil comes from that region.
Yep.
We rely on Kuwaiti LFG. Japan's about 70% of Japan's energy infrastructure comes from the oil leaving the Gulf. India, about 60% of their oil comes from the Gulf, and China, about 40%. Mm-hmm. Not only does oil leave the Gulf, but the Gulf states rely on food imports and desalination plants. If Iran hit a desalination plant with a $50,000 drone, which we can't defend effectively, it's big problems for the Gulf states, especially Bahrain, 50% Shia population.
Iraq's already stopped production, hasn't it? I think it's financial front page of the Financial Times tells us today.
Exactly. I mean, we need an off-ramp as soon as possible because this could escalate and cause real problems for global trade and America as well. That's how Iran defeats America, is if they can defeat the Gulf states.
How easy or otherwise is it to manoeuvre someone such as President Trump towards and actually on an off-ramp? That's my concern. I don't think you're wrong, because clearly there is no plan. I sense they're making it up as they go along. Every sane person knows that the Iran regime needs to be replaced. But what we haven't really got here is an A to Z of how it's going to happen.
I agree that Iran was horrible, but if you look at American interventions, Western interventions, we don't really interfere in the global South for the sake of democracy all the time. I mean, for the last 100 years, it's probably been to attack to defeat socialism, communism, or for corporate interests, really. And this is, to me, it seems like it's no different. I mean, the Iranians, to say they were building a nuclear weapon was, weak at best.
Well, the intelligence seems to be incredible in that on Saturday they were able to pinpoint not just the Ayatollah, but some of his key lieutenants, and even, sadly, it would appear, some members of his family as well. And I read this is because Israel Mossad had hacked all the traffic cameras in Tehran, so they were just following these people around. That speaks to an extraordinary level of intel, doesn't it?
Oh, they have incredible intel, but the US, I think the US intelligence a few months back when we first hit the nuclear bunkers was saying that there was no credible threat. And even the Ayatollah himself said there's a religious, essentially Shia Islam will not allow them to use nuclear weapons, which, you could believe or not. But
I think any regime that will kill that number of its own citizens, I think they'd probably be capable of anything, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but I mean, under Obama, we had international checks. We could go and check what they were doing, whereas now we have nothing. And if you look at states like North Korea, we're not pressuring North Korea because they have nuclear weapons. But so it sends a message to the whole world. If you don't want to get bullied.
But if the checks, why didn't the checks work under Obama? Why were they able to develop to the point they developed?
I don't think they did.
Well, I suppose it's lack of knowledge everywhere, isn't it? All right, thank you for that, Billy. Joe in Plump said, I'm sure polling shows most Britons disagree with the actions on Iran. Keir Starmer's trying to do the best for his country and not rolling over, as the right-wing press is doing. Faraz in Denham, we've now lost ground with our key ally and trading partner. We'll have long-term ramifications by the US as a nation. Notwithstanding the merits of our involvement, there are just moments in life. Key leadership is necessary for the greater good. And alas, our PM failed to do that. Let's move from the PM to the Chancellor and what we were hearing yesterday. And as many newspapers interpret it, but as one interprets it with its front page, It would appear that a million of our poorest pensioners have now been dragged into a tax trap, something I discussed in the previous hour with Shadow Chancellor, Conservative Sir Mel Stride.
It's totally wrong. People that have retired and worked hard, you know, they want dignity in retirement. They don't want to start getting taxed when they wouldn't otherwise have been taxed at all. In terms of why it's happened, one is because Rachel Rees has extended the freeze of the tax thresholds, including the lower tax threshold, meaning more and more people, as the state pension rises, are getting dragged into it. We, in the last election, Nick, went into that last election with something called the triple lot plus, and the plus bit meant that we would have increased that threshold in line with the triple lot to make sure that that didn't happen. So I'm afraid this is just one further example of what happens when you mismanage an economy, overtax an economy, get that sluggish growth that you just referred to. I'm afraid people pay the price, including some of our elderly and most vulnerable.
So is it a case of they're poor pensioners, or it's a group that's had it pretty good for so long with the triple lock? Duncan Weldon is an economist, former advisor on economic policy to the Labour Party, and wrote 200 Years of Muddling Through. In your view, Duncan Weldon, which is it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I mean, you know, I think it's a bit of both. Look, the tax thresholds will have now been frozen for a decade, but a stealth tax. You know, politicians have both this Labour government and the previous Conservative government have decided that freezing thresholds raises a lot of money and gets much less pushback than changing actual tax rates. That's why they're both doing it. But the big picture is that the state pension has risen very quickly over the last 15 years compared to wages, and pensioners still get a very good deal from the tax system. They don't pay national insurance contributions, which people below pension age do.
Is the days of the triple lock numbered?
The days of the triple lock might well be numbered. You know, the triple lock, to remind people, is this idea that every year the state pension will increase by inflation or by average earnings growth or by 2.5%, whichever of those three numbers is the largest. So it's what it's meant over the last 15 years is that the basic state pension has risen a lot quicker than average wages have. It's risen a lot quicker than inflation has. And that is obviously quite a large cost. Now, what we should remember is that this government and the previous government have tried to control that cost by increasing the age at which people can get their pension. I think what most economists would say in the long run, that's the best way to control these costs. As people's lifespans expand, as people stay healthier longer in life, then, you know, keeping the pension age rising in line with that makes sense. And Britain has been much better at that than many European countries. You know, there are still countries in Europe where people can retire on their full state pension at 60.
Noting that the age has been moved up, and I think we're now in our mid-60s, I'm not really sure. Yeah. Noting that you said that, how economically sustainable is it something such as a triple lock in your view?
Look, it's going to be, when you look at the numbers from the Office of Budget Responsibility for the long-term projections, where this leaves Britain in the 2050s, the 2060s, you know, we know we have an aging population. We know that we have fewer children than we used to have. We're going to have a greater share of our population retired in the future. It becomes expensive. If you want to maintain this triple lock, if you want to maintain this, you know, generous settlement to pensioners, then in the long run, and I'm talking 2-3 decades here, you're talking about more taxation on working people to pay for it.
Duncan, really enjoyed our conversation. Have yourself a good day. Duncan Weldon is an economist, was an advisor on economic policy to Labour, and wrote the book 200 Years of Muddling Through. It's not bad, is it, the triple lock? An annual increase by whichever is the highest, inflation, wage growth, or 2.5%. You'll be a brave government to stand that down. So is it a case of those poor old pensioners, or is it a time a reality check? We'll take your views on that. And we're going behind bars, literally in some cases, as prisoners get Deliveroo-style deliveries. We'll give you more details on that. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
A senior government figure's told LBC that Sir Keir Starmer won't be upset by President Trump's latest criticism of his decision-making on the Iran conflict. Donald Trump has described the Prime Minister as no Winston Churchill. Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray's told Nick Sir Keir is just focused on getting on with the job. The first government charter flight will take off later, bringing stranded Britons home from the Middle East. The Foreign Office says it'll leave Muscat in Oman tonight, with with the most vulnerable given priority. And President Trump says the US Navy will escort tankers through the Strait of Hormuz if necessary to protect international oil supplies. The shipping route has been effectively closed by Iran's threats to target vessels. One other story, the government is to stop issuing study visas to people from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. The Home Office says there's been widespread abuse and asylum claims have gone up 470% since 2021. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's get away from our conversation about the Middle East and even the great Sir Winston Churchill and talk about jails and gang members who use drones to smuggle drugs, weapons and phones into Britain's prisons in a system likened by a judge to Deliveroo or Uber Eats. Now, this particular case, all have been jailed. I won't give you too much detail on that. But this case was heard at Harrow Crown Court, which was sitting at Hendon Magistrates Court, and heard that items such as flick knives were contraband planned to be smuggled into the jails. Now, the Metropolitan Police said the gang that was jailed here was responsible for 75% of what are called drone drops into London prisons for a period of about 3 months, ending in the beginning of last year. They had effectively, it was like a, as I say earlier, like a Deliveroo system with delivery drivers. Now, Charlie Taylor is His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Prisons, and it's fair to say has been warning of this for some time and joins me now. Good to have you on again, Mr. Taylor, and I recall speaking with you about this. Just if I can start, remind listeners who are not familiar with jail procedures, how is it done? And remind listeners of what you said about this last year. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's remarkable how quickly drones can drop off packages to prisons and be in and out of the jail within seconds. And the usual playbook is that a package is flown in with a drone, the largest of which I've come across has been 11 kilos in weight.
Goodness me.
And these can contain everything from the usual range of drugs, mobile phones, chargers, other sorts of electronic goods. Seen a pair of trainers get brought into a prison, a hat, minoxidil if you're worried about hair loss.
The next thing will be Wegovy or whatever those slimming jabs are. They'll be bringing those in soon.
Oh, they're in there. They're in there already. Don't worry about that.
No, they're bringing slimming jabs into our jails, Inspector.
Yeah, Ozempic has been found in some of these packages as well. So I think what it shows is the volume of material that's being able to be brought in. Because, you know, if you want to make money, the easiest thing to bring in is just a very small quantities of drugs. And that used to be the traditional thing that would happen. It would get sneaked in through visits or possibly through a corrupt member of staff. But now what we see is you can, as this just judge described it, a kind of Uber Eats type system where very large quantities of almost any sort of contraband that you want to get your hands on can be flown directly to prisons. It gets dropped below the cell, and then the prisoners will in effect do a kind of version of hook a duck, where they'll fish the package out from their window with a broom handle and some string attached to it. with a hook and then pull it up to their window. And if they can get it into their window, they can get it out of their window, which means it can be round the jail very quickly before staff, unless they're very quick, will be able to come and open the door and search the cell.
Chief Inspector, remind my listeners, when did you first sound a warning about this?
Well, we've been talking about drones now for more than 2 years, but particularly we flagged up in January last year the ingress of drones into two prisons holding some of the riskiest men in the country. That was Long Lart in Worcestershire, in Warwickshire, and Manchester Prison, where very large quantities of contraband were getting into an extremely risky population. Organised crime bosses doing very long stretches, and terrorist prisoners as well. So I was worried this wasn't just a threat to individual prisons, this was actually a threat to national security, and described it at the time as the prison service having in effect ceded the airspace above many of our jails to serious organised crime. And sadly, although this is a very good result for London jails, it won't be long before someone else is trying again.
You are far closer to the security of prisons than I am, but I know them to be fairly violent places. The idea that the three who were convicted yesterday, they had some flick knives that were due for livery as well. Someone's going... A prison officer, could get seriously hurt if not killed here, Chief Inspector.
Well, that is a huge concern, and we've already seen some examples where knives, and I've seen some pretty horrific photographs of zombie-style knives, knives that can only be used for one thing, being brought into some jails. So we know that's already happening. Thankfully, it's not that widespread yet, but there is a huge risk that, yes, there could be a serious assault on a member of staff or another prisoner, and potentially even worse.
Right, we've identified the problem, Chief Inspector. What is the solution?
Well, the solution really is threefold. The first thing is about physical security. So it's about hardening the target. It's about making sure that windows can be opened, but they can't be opened to the extent that you're able to get stuff in and out of them. And what we're seeing in very slow progress, when we went to Manchester recently, we're beginning to see jails change their windows over. And where they do, that does make a difference, because it suddenly makes them much less accessible. So windows that open in a different way, or windows that have a grill in front of them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is about the physical security around the grounds, for example, making sure that CCTV cameras are working, operating, and someone is supervising them. Then it's about making sure that some of the basics in prisons are done right. So, for example, making sure that grass is cut, because we've seen drones wrapped in grass clippings and dropped into overgrown lawns. Making sure that rubbish is cleared away, because we've seen drones delivering packages that are disguised as rubbish bags and dropped into a big pile of rubbish. Making sure that checks are done around the perimeter and also within the prison before prisoners get out of their cells in the mornings. Because on an AstroTurf pitch, we've seen an example of a package wrapped in AstroTurf and then dropped onto an AstroTurf pitch. I mean, there are some clever, thoughtful guys with a lot of time on their hands who are making an enormous money out of this. And then the final thing is about technological solutions. And we know there are some trials going on to look at whether there are some more effective ways of being able to disrupt drone operations to stop them from even getting over the wall in the first place.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was going to appeal. I'm no expert in drone flight, but is there not like a, I'm going to use a very crude expression, a jammer or a blocker that could in some way be deployed?
Well, there are various bits of tech that are being tried round and about. The difficulty is what you don't want is the prison service that spends a huge amount of money on one piece of tech, which quickly gets subverted by what is a very fast developing, particularly as a result of the Ukraine war, a very fast developing piece of technology. So tech absolutely has its place, but making sure that it's tech that is tried and tested over a long period of time, rather than something which will work for a week and then becomes obsolete.
Final question or observation. You said how they wrap them as bin bags, they wrap them in AstroTurf. There's obviously a lot of, for them to be this artful, there's a lot of money available here, isn't there, for these nefarious practices?
There is enormous amount of money being made. And I think my huge concern about this, and it flies completely under the radar, is that this isn't just about individual prisoners being shaken down to pay off debts and often getting beaten up to pay debts for drugs and other contraband. What we have no idea of the scale of, but we know that it's an issue, is family members being coerced into going down, Granny and Grandpa going down to the building society to take out their life savings to pay off their grandson's drug dealers to stop so he doesn't get beaten up. That is happening on a really big scale. And I think the gaps between the wealth of individual prisoners and the value of contraband getting in is very big. And that gap is being filled by family members being coerced by organised crime.
Such an illuminating conversation. Really appreciate your time today. Good luck to you and all your colleagues. Charlie Taylor is His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Prisons. Wow, I learned a lot about that. Wrapping it in astroturf and grass clippings. It's all going on, isn't it? There must be technology. You might want to talk about that. But unsurprisingly, with the global events going on, President Trump giving us the benefit of his views on Sir Keir Starmer, that is dominating our conversation. James in Tower Hamlets. James, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I'm a history teacher.
And yes. What age group do you teach?
All the way from 11 up to 16 or 17.
What's on the GCSE syllabus? French Revolution? What have we got there?
No, well, they do modules. It depends what exam board students have, but my ones, for example, they do the Cold War, which happens after 1945, yep. after Churchill's gone.
Right.
And they study sort of the Nazis and the build-up of that from the 1930s, which is before Churchill was in power.
Right.
And then other modules, which are rather, you know, unassociated with each other later on, like medicine and this sort of thing.
Okay. But I mean, one of my colleagues was just telling me she studied Harold Wilson when she was at school, and I'm thinking that's rather embarrassing because I was alive for him. I studied the French Revolution, which is starting to make me feel rather old.
I've known students do like social change in the 1960s, and so Harold Wilson would come up.
Fascinating. So we spoke to, I guess, 18, 19, 20-year-olds. What was the greatest achievement of Sir Winston Churchill? It wasn't really stellar feedback, I've got to be honest with you, James.
No. It doesn't surprise me at all. Because, you know, the choice of GCSE modules, which are taken by 90% of schools, don't include any discussion of World War II itself. Mm. And the exam boards, for whatever reasons, have decided to do those modules. And I think AQA does World War II, but none of the other ones do. And a lot of teachers are very left-wing and see Churchill and celebrating Britain winning a war as being something to avoid. They think it's jingoistic. They think it's divisive. And they think that, you know, it's a right wing pride in the country and its achievements. And God forbid, pride in the achievements of empire, these sorts of things, are seen as right wing popular ideas, which they don't agree with, and they consciously omit this from when they're teaching students about history. That's why nobody knows anything about Churchill.
How should the empire be taught?
I think it needs to be balanced. I think that it needs to be taken in the context of world development, because every European country had an empire, and including Russia and places like China too. So it should be seen as a feature of human development. I think that issues like transatlantic slavery need to be in there, but it shouldn't. The current focus is that only Britain did slavery. Kids leave schools, many schools, thinking that the only country that took slaves was Britain. They didn't know anything about the Spanish Empire, for example, which was far worse. And so there's a lot of selection going on, and it's not right. I think. To be honest, I think that the government needs to be more prescriptive about what needs to be taught in Key Stage 3 to students. At the moment, they're told they have to learn about the Holocaust, but everything else is up to the teacher. Mm-hmm. And it means that many teachers who are, 90% of teachers are Labour or Liberal or Green voters, that surveys have said that, they choose things which match their politics.
How often is there a engaged conversation on this in staff common rooms, if you still call them that?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Because many teachers who are right of centre, the 10% of teachers who are right of centre, are very much aware that their lives can be made very difficult by the trade union managers at school and the senior leaders at school, who invariably are very left-wing. And if you are seen as someone who is sense. Look, let's say somebody at school said, I'm voting for reform, okay, yeah. Which is the most popular political party in the country at the moment.
According to
the
polling, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And membership. They would probably find themselves on a charge being told by someone in management that they were at risk to children and because it would make some children feel unsafe. And that's happened to colleagues of mine.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What happened to their careers?
Well, they've ended up being sort of forced to leave. You end up having a working situation which becomes so uncomfortable and where you're put under additional scrutiny through lesson observations and book checks and things like this, which then make you feel very insecure in your work.
James, I must leave it there. People effectively being pushed out of the education system because they want to vote for reform, which is a perfect... You can have whatever views you like about reform, but it is a political party that is gaining some support. It's not an illegal activity. James, thank you. I've got to go there. We're way late to the news, but I find that of great interest. We might try and explore that a little bit more. We can only talk about that. We're going to talk about prisons, though, as well, and how this extraordinary delivery service could be stopped. But we are at 9:47, so we need to get in those LBC News headlines from Dominic Ellis.
A senior government figure has told LBC that Sir Keir Starmer is just getting on with the job following Donald Trump's scathing remarks on his handling of the Iran conflict. A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East as the conflict enters a fifth day. And the Chancellor will meet with North Sea industry bosses as the war causes gas and oil prices to rise sharply. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most, some rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are queues on the M25 clockwise from Junction 5 for the M26 to Junction 6 for Godstone after a lorry broke down earlier, so all the lanes are open now. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are also queues to the Dartford Tunnel from Junction 3 for the M20 after an accident earlier. It's stop-start on the M11 going into town. It's taking about half an hour to get to Junction 4 for the North Circular. The A2 westbound is partly blocked at the Dartford Heath. That's because of an accident, so there are long delays from the Bean interchange before the M25. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the Baker Loo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone, and minor delays on the rest of the line. And there's disruption to flights at Luton and London City airports. It's because of the foggy weather conditions.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Great good news for Keir Starmer as Donald Trump proves conclusively that the Prime Minister has got it morally, legally and obviously correct about Iran. So PMQs might be interesting today.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
I'm literally crying.
Same, but my bladder can't take these laughs. I may have to leave.
Wait, try one of my always discreet maximum protection pants. Total game changer when the floodgates open up.
Seriously?
It gives me complete peace of mind, even for my heaviest bladder leak surprises. Go try one on.
Fair play. And now I can stay until the last gag.
Try Always Discreet's new maximum protection pants for heavy bladder leaks.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd quit my job and I'd finish my novel.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
Yes!
So, what's the book called?
Neil, the Vampire Detective.
Sounds awful.
Who cares? I'm rich!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now from Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
With over 50 years experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, James' calls concerning education certainly sparked it off. Andy asks, why is anyone at work announcing who they're voting for? Well, I think a lot of people, when the local elections come around, it's not unknown. It's not unknown to say who you're going to be voting for. Tess says it's not an illegal activity, but the party's views, Reform's views, are diabolical. If you're a teacher, you're voting in Reform, you have serious questions to answer. Why are you trying to influence kids off the back of misogyny and corruption? Do you think you're being fully broad-minded there? Carolyn in East Yorkshire. This man isn't a teacher, he's talking absolute rubbish. I'm a history teacher, not currently teaching, but also a Labour councillor. Reform teachers, there aren't many of them. No, because they're not drawn in by the propaganda. Again, do you think you're being suited? I'm not saying that I support... There's no one party on earth that I support all their policies. There ever never would be, I sense, but... You've just decided, Carolyn, do you think you're being broad-minded enough as a teacher that you've just written off absolutely everything Reform do? All right, we might return to that. But let's talk prisons and why it would appear we have a Deliveroo or what's the other one? Uber Eats service for jail, people in jail. Andrew's in Powys. Andrew, your view. Good morning.
Hiya. Good to speak to you, Nick.
Good to have you on.
Nets. Why don't they put nets up?
Nets. Simple.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
You know, like, to stop your birds nicking your cherries and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, but I mean, they do. Birds will stop nicking your cherries or even pinching your plums. But if you think how vast a prison might be, with the prison yard, with the exercise yard, with where the bins come in, I mean, and then obviously stuff is going to get in the middle of the netting. Who's going to have the time? How will you ever clear that out? I don't think it's going to work, is it?
I think you could zone it. You could. It'd certainly have an impact if you sort of zone it or do it in areas that.
Well, look, something clearly has to be done. Do you not think the way? Hello, I think we've lost your line, Andrew. Can you hear me? No, we can't. I'll go, Andrew. If you can't hit, I know you can't. Sorry, matey. We're going to move on. We might try and get you back. Gary's in Lincoln. Gary, what can you offer this conversation? Good morning.
Good morning. When I was in the prison service, I retired 4 years ago.
Oh, right.
The old-fashioned way was that they'd scoop out pigeons and put inside the drugs, weapons and mobile phones, throw them over the wall, and the work parties, the prisoners who were going around cleaning the areas, would pick them up, take them into the jail. Obviously,
So you get a pigeon, obviously the pigeon is dead, you scoop out all its innards, and you put inside it a mobile phone in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
How incredible. How often did that happen, Gary?
It was constant, because dead pigeons didn't look out of place in the jail. That they used to eat the rat poison. So they'd be walking around, sort of, and you'd think, well, that'll be dead shortly.
Oh, God.
They'd be stood staring at the wall. But, that would happen quite a lot. Just before I left...
Did it say 4 years ago you retired? Just to...
Just over 4 years.
Right.
But drones were starting to appear before I left. And the problem with people say about blocking the signals, etc., is it would affect areas outside the prison, so you can't block things. It's the same with mobile phone signals. You can't block them because it would affect outside the prison. You can't just localize it.
What about the idea that was put forward? Unfortunately, we lost line to Andrew. Using some kind of netting. I think probably these prison sites are so vast it's not going to fly, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not practical to have netting, like I say, and it would catch wildlife, yeah. birds, yeah. and everything like that. Yeah. But and we do, we have, or we, when I was there, we have areas that are sort of covered over for like high risk areas to prevent escapes. But and that would stop things coming in.
How long were you in the prison service, Gary?
Only 28 years.
Only 28 years. What, had your mum done it, or your dad done it, or your brother done it?
No, nobody. I was a milkman, and a colleague, ex-colleague, went into the prison service, and he jumped into my milk float one day, and put my arm up my back, and he said, "Why aren't you doing this job?" And so I did. I applied for it. Got in. Enjoyed the job.
Did you?
Fantastic. Fantastic job.
Really?
Yeah.
What's great about yeah. it? Aren't you always concerned for your personal safety?
Do you know something? No. I think I can recall one day, maybe two, where I thought, oh, you know. But I've got a gob on me.
Right.
And... and I used that. I used my gob. And every day I would go in and people would know I'm there. I was very...
Are you ex-military before you were a milkman?
No.
How did the 28, just 28 years, how did the prison service change? What were the ups? Or were there any downs after nearly three decades of service, Gary?
It's from the start, the discipline part did it relaxed very much. It reflects society, so whatever happens outside, it comes inside. So,
in what category jail, or did you work in all categories?
Yes, I did.
Oh my God, yeah. Even Cat A.
Yeah, I was at Whitemoor Prison, which is a dispersal, and I worked in the special unit, which was the highest category you can get. But I enjoyed all of it. It didn't matter which it was. 'Cause I'll be honest, there was a lot of satisfaction in helping people
right.
as much as keeping people away from the public, you know. And it was just fantastic.
28 years of reminiscences, Gary. I wish I had more time, but thank you, for calling, and B, walking us through that long, long career in the prison service. That's it for today. If you missed the show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app. You can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for me. James O'Brien is waiting the other side of the news on LBC, and I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and do you know, one of the many interesting things about Winston Churchill is that he spent much of the 1930s being derided and dismissed as suffering from what I suppose idiots in the 1930s would have called Hitler derangement syndrome. And if you wonder what newspapers looked like when they were bigging up Adolf Hitler and treating him like the Second Coming while attacking British politicians, then the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail and others provide you with a crash course in that psychology today, because they are siding with a foreign leader embarked upon an illegal war against their own democratically elected prime minister. Presumably, they can't wait for the refugee crisis that will almost certainly ensue.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a senior government figure says Sir Keir Starmer is just getting on with the job following Donald Trump's remarks on his handling of the Iran conflict. Mr. Trump has renewed his scathing attack on Sir Keir after initially blocking the use of UK military bases. The US president described the Prime Minister last night as no Winston Churchill. But the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, has told LBC Sir Keir was right to take his time.
President Trump has expressed, you know, his disagreement with the decision that we took about not joining the initial strikes on Iran. But that was the right decision, and it was a wise decision that the Prime Minister took. These decisions about what to do when it comes to military action are so important, and you can see how important it is for him.
The Prime Minister will face questions from MPs in the Commons this lunchtime over his decisions on Iran. The former Conservative Defence Secretary, Penny Mordaunt, has told LBC this morning she thinks Sir Keir has mishandled the situation.
Seems to me that the Prime Minister thinks that if he just emphasises to Iran that we're not involved in these strikes, that they're going to leave us alone. That's an idiotic position to take. This is a country that the regime, not the people, that hate us. The average number of attacks on British shipping in the Straits of Hormuz per year is about 500.
Iranian state media says the funeral for the country's former leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, will be held tonight. He was killed in the first wave of US-Israeli strikes on Saturday. A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East. The Foreign Office says priority will be given to the most vulnerable. The plane will leave the Omani capital, Muscat, at 7 p.m. UK time. One other story this morning for you. The government is to stop issuing study visas to students from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. The Home Office says the visas are being used by people who then claim asylum when in the UK. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 19 at 10,504. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, we get through so many snacks. Have you got anything to help me save?
Well, we're always matching and lowering prices. So hundreds of Sainsbury's fresh fruit, veg and everyday products are price matched to Aldi. And every week with Nectar, you can save money on thousands of the products your family loves. So you can snack away knowing you're saving money. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. Selected products, Aldi price match not in NI. Nectar prices require Nectar account. Terms at sainsburys.co.uk/Aldi price match and nectar.com/prices terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It is 3 minutes after ten. And, well, let's start the show with three observations, shall we? The first, and this is what we will explore with the first phone in today, is that this is rather good news for Keir Starmer. And it should immediately be obvious that this is rather good news for Keir Starmer. I don't know what words you took away from yesterday's show, if you were kind enough or indeed wise enough to listen. But for me, it was an absolute no contest. The words I took away from yesterday's show were words that we were reminding each other Keir Starmer had used the previous day in the House of Commons. You don't go to war without a lawful basis, and you don't go to war without a viable, thought-through plan. So if you were to hyphenate thought through, you would find yourself focusing on just five words: lawful basis and viable thought through plan. I think, and I will check with you a little later, that Donald Trump has finally provided an answer to the question that General David Petraeus, one of the heroes, if that's the right word, of the Second Gulf War, always asks, tell me how this ends. I think Donald Trump might have provided an answer to that, which would make people who are siding with him in this exercise, if they had a brain, then they would be pausing for thought. But anyway, that's to come. The second thing that occurred to me, and this is, I think, quite important, is that Donald Trump could call Keir Starmer the hero of the hour tomorrow. I don't know that I've successfully articulated this to you in the past, but nobody knows how to do it. Even now, even a year and a bit into his second term, nobody knows how to do it. The tools that we use, all of us, the tools that we use are not equipped for this character. You report the President of the United States of America praising the UK Prime Minister, because you presume it's going to be a permanent or a semi-permanent condition. And then the next day, in Donald Trump's case, an hour later, he may be attacking the UK Prime Minister, and you report it with identical levels of prominence and attention. And it's mad, because in a normal universe, they've cancelled each other out. It's like somebody saying, I love you and I hate you, in the space of 6 hours. Well, which one do you pick? Do they love you or do they hate you? Do you pick the last thing that they said because of recency bias? Or do you just pick the answer that you prefer? So somebody has said to you in the course of the last 24 hours, I love you and I hate you. Do they love you or do they hate you? You don't know, really, do you? But they're gaslighting you. It's a form of coercive control. And my profession, and I am part of this problem, my profession does not know how to handle it. I'll give you a really helpful example, because I sometimes worry that no one else will. And the example I'll give you is something else that Donald Trump referred to yesterday when he was doing what all online racists do and somehow using Winston Churchill with a fat side order of ignorance to drive home his own questionable or deeply corrupt political points. And he cited Diego Garcia over the while criticising Keir Starmer. Now, on the question of Diego Garcia or on the question of the Chagos Islands, he has oscillated violently between approval and disapproval. So what does he think? Is he in favour or is he against this deal that was kind of imposed upon the United Kingdom by both international law and the weakening of our status caused partly by Brexit and the conclusion of negotiations that were started and almost concluded by the previous government, by a Conservative government, something that, I mean, again, with Kemi Badenoch, do you think she doesn't know that or she doesn't understand that? Is it actual ignorance of facts or is it simple failure to understand relatively simple facts? Who knows? 52-48 with her every time. Don't forget PMQs on the way at 12. So the Chagos Island story is the perfect example of how we haven't equipped ourselves to deal with somebody who has no relationship whatsoever with consistency or truth. Is Donald Trump in favour or against the deal that the UK government has struck with Mauritius over the future of the Chagos Islands? Is he in favour or against? You don't know. Now, if you're biased, if you are prejudiced, if you are seduced by Donald Trump's curious but heady cocktail of racism, misogyny and climate change denial, then you are going to pretend to know that he is definitely against it. But if you were to be reminded that 10 minutes ago he was in favour of it, 10 minutes ago he was praising it, you would have to put your fingers in your ears and go, la, 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 la. And the profession that I am part of still doesn't know how to handle this. How do you report it if he changes his mind all the time and dominates the news cycle with a change of mind? Even if the new position, I'm not even coming close to exaggerating, even if the new position is the polar opposite of the previous position that was held just minutes earlier. If you don't believe in anything, you can do this, but journalism doesn't know how to cope. Journalism has no idea how to handle somebody who will say at 10 o'clock on Monday morning that black is black, and at 10 o'clock the next Tuesday morning say that black is most definitely white, and anybody who says that black is black is a scumbag, and I'm going to set fire to them, or I'm going to cease trading with them, or I'm going to punish them, I'm going to bring down things upon them the likes of which have never been seen before. And then on Wednesday he's back to saying black is black, and all the people he was threatening with hell and damnation on the Tuesday are sitting there just dazed and confused, and quite possibly